We'll start the agenda in a moment. I believe the minutes were just handed out, so if you can quick read through them.
Mr. Chair, I've reviewed the minutes, and I'll move the minutes.
Okay, Representative Christensen moves the minutes from March the 8th. Questions? Corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor of the March 8th minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes have been approved. And I should add, we have a quorum. I think I maybe said that earlier, but officially we are in business. We have a pretty long list of bills to deal with today, folks, and so we'd like to start right away with House Bill 2234, Nick Zerwas, Representative Zerwas. Representative, you can officially move your bill if you'd like. It'll be laid over.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll move House Bill 2234 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right. You're ready to go?
All right, Mr. Chair, members, knowing the committee's long agenda today, I'll be brief, and then I have a testifier to provide some brief comments as well. Mr. Chair, members, the following proposal is a request to offset some of the high costs of providing a family residency medical resident training program at North Memorial. This proposal would help to cover some of those costs to assure that this program continues to meet the training needs of our physicians across the state. As many committee members are aware, we continue to struggle with the long-term needs of meeting the provider requirements for the state of Minnesota. Provider shortages impact both underserved populations in the metro area and in greater Minnesota. Our hope is to be able to entice and incent providers to continue to provide care in those underserved populations and communities by helping lower some of the costs it takes to train them. That being said, I do have a testifier available from North Memorial to provide some testimony about their residency training program and how this bill could be impactful.
All right, welcome to the committee, and if you'd identify yourself for the record, and then proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andrew Holton. I am the Chief Medical Officer for North Memorial Healthcare. The points I would like to make today is that North Memorial has been in the business of training what I would call full-service family medicine residents since 1974. We have graduated over 400 residents, 90% of which have stayed within the state. 50% of those have stayed within the Minneapolis urban area, and the additional have committed themselves to rural health care, especially in underserved areas. One of the unique factors around this training program at North Memorial is that we train what I call full-service family medicine training residents. And what that means is that they're able to go into underserved areas, provide full service of family medicine, including obstetrical care, cesarean sections, and a term we use, cradle to grave, or birth to death care. We know we're hitting critical shortages in certain rural areas, and clearly in urban areas that are underserved, especially within our community base of North Minneapolis in that area. We ask that we receive support for this bill as we want to continue training. We know training is increasing every year, and the funding we receive for training continues to decline on an annual basis. Since we are basically a break-even corporation in terms of healthcare needs, we will have to consider how well we can train family medicine residents in the future if we continue to struggle with covering the costs of these. Some of the recognitions that we've received were the number one training program by U.S. News and World Report in Minnesota. We're the number five training program in the Upper Midwest by U.S. News and World Report. We have multiple awards for excellence in teaching, including Teachers of the Year, Residents of the Year, Research Qualifications of the Year, and we have multiple community integration programs that we support on an annual basis, including the latter, a mentoring program for children 8 years to adult with health careers, something called CHAT, which is monthly community discussion groups focusing on the social determinants of healthcare, which we know play such an important role, as well as educating more than 50 students per year with encouragement in developing an interest in family medicine that will continue to matriculate during their graduation, their post-graduation period in studying family medicine. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that I have, and thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Members, any questions? Pretty quiet. I think that's good.
That's usually a good sign, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it is. So I can renew your motion.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll renew the motion. Ross file 2234 be laid over for possible inclusion in your omnibus bill, and thanks to the committee.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, House File 2257, Senator Womar. I recall, is this your first committee or your first bill in this committee? Or did I miss one?
No, Chair. I think I presented one a while back.
Okay.
I brought really good goodies.
Well, I wasn't in.
I would have brought more.
That wasn't really why I brought it up. Education had treats before this committee. And I turned that down, too. So, willpower. Okay. House File 2257. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure what and where we're sending this bill to.
It'll be laid over.
Okay. I move House File 2257 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Chair, committee members, this bill does make two changes to the Office of Higher Education's child care grant program. It changes the parameters. The two changes that it makes is that, one, it increases the number of semesters the students are eligible to receive this grant, and then it increases from 8 semesters to 10 semesters. And then it changes the maximum grant amount from $2,800 to $3,000. We know that the cost of child care is rising, and we know that it takes parents who have to care for children longer time to graduate from college, and so that is why we're proposing these two changes. And I'm going to have Nikki from the Office of Higher Education provide a little testimony into the reasoning behind this.
Okay. Welcome.
For the record, my name is Nikki Oliver. I'm with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. And I know that Representative Omar has more testifiers, but to provide like a technical overview, we've heard from students, and I know Representative Omar probably heard from students, about the length of time that the grant's available. So like she mentioned, the changes will extend the grant from 4 years to 5 years. And in the last legislative session, there were also some changes made to also include graduate and professional students to be eligible for this. Something that our office has noticed, and you all have a handout of the average amount costs for child care of recipients and also the institutions that have opted in to participate in child care grants. And as you can see, on average, the grants only cover about half of the students' needs. So to increase the maximum amount awarded is very impactful for the students. And that's what this bill is doing.
Do we know how many of the graduate students took advantage of the opportunity?
Because this change, the change from last year, happened late in the year, and this is a campus-based program, so our office issues out the funds to institutions that have opted in to participate, and because it was opened up to graduate and professional students after that opt-in, deadline, there were a lot of graduate institutions that weren't able to participate yet, and we're just now getting the information about how many graduate students were able to participate. So in the next year or the end of this year, we should have more of that data available to you all.
All right. Thank you very much. Dr. Nwoma, are there other testifiers that want to come forward?
I think so. We have Susan Warfield. And then two student testifiers.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm with the University of Minnesota. I direct the student parent program there, the Student Parent Help Center. I have worked with low-income families for 35 years as a social worker, and 17 of those were at the U of M with the Student Parent Help Center.
Can I have you give your name, please?
Susan Warfield.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. May I begin?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, great. We think both of these changes are wonderful because, as Ms. Oliver just said, the cost, I think Minnesota has the highest cost of child care of any state in the United States at this time. And child care is a make or break point. And all the research nationally on student parents, they state that while there are many services that can go towards supporting a student parent in college, child care is a make or break point. If they don't have some place to leave their child that's of high quality, they will not be able to attend classes. And we see this all the time when students don't have consistent child care. The term limits have been a particular concern for us and our program. When I first started with the Student Parent Help Center, there was a fifth year of coverage, and we noted a significant change in the number of students we began to lose once it was cut back to the four-year limit. In this term alone, we had 19 students that had been dependent on the post-secondary child care grant for child care assistance in one term alone reached that maximum, and we are lucky enough to have some private emergency grant funding so that we can offer one-term grants to those students, but most universities are not lucky enough to have that, and a one-time grant is in no way going to be able to replace the amount of funding that these students have lost. To give you an example of amounts, they are also hitting the four-year limit for their Minnesota State grant. So in one term, the neediest students we have, most of which are zero EFC, are losing what can amount to $4,000 or $5,000 in funding all in one fell swoop on both the Minnesota State grant and their child care assistance. When they hit that limit, they're at risk for leaving the university. And these are the students that both the state, through this child care funding, and the university has invested a significant amount of resources. They're also, because they are in their fourth year of attendance, they're also typically in debt with student loan debt. And this can mean that they not only leave prior to degree completion, but leave one or two terms away with a significant amount of loan debt. The state recently expanded the coverage to include graduate and professional students, and this has been a very positive and exciting change. We have seen quite a few graduate students' responses to the child care grant. At this point, I believe we have more graduate and professional students on the grant than undergrad. But what we're worried about is we're actually seeing people in their extended years of their PhD programs receiving the grant, the undergrads who have no degree to depend on and no benefit of a degree to their employability actually being cut off because of that eight-term marker.
All right, thank you. Representative Omar, there are some students listed on my sheet here.
Yeah, Jenrick and Jessica.
Good afternoon. Welcome. And who's first?
Hi, my name is Cabal Jenrick, and I am a sophomore student at St. Catherine University. I am here today because I am a first-generation college student. My parents did not attend college, and I am also a mother to two wonderful children. And I am one of the receivers of the Minnesota State Grant for Child Care. And it is so, it has been essential to my education. Without that, I would not be able to attend school. I am turning 30 years old today, so I have, not today, this year, but I have waited, not yet. I'm also one of those student parents who have waited a little bit to return back to school, waited until child care is now just a little bit cheaper than it would be if I had an infant or a toddler. But having this assistant has allowed me to go to college to make sure my children are in a child care center that I approve of. And it doesn't even cover half of the cost that it costs to put them in there. But it alleviates the stress knowing that I have this to help me throughout at least the 4 years that I have now. It would be nice to know that it would be there for me after I graduate with my undergrad. It is just something that parents, knowing all the costs that you have associated with having kids, it's just something, it's just providing that extra something to say, hey, it's okay, we're here for you, you can go to college. This is something that would help you. So it's been very beneficial to me as a student parent to be able to receive that and help that with child care expenses.
Thank you. And are you Jessica?
Yes, Jessica Hurdle.
Welcome.
Thank you. Well, my name is Jessica. I'm 21 years old, and I have two children. They're 2 and 4. I'm finishing up my second year at Dunwoody in the HVAC service program. This grant is everything. I would not be here starting my career if I didn't have it. I wouldn't be able to do it. I currently pay for both my children. I pay $300 a week, which is cheap compared to an actual center. They're in a in-home licensed daycare, which is, the cost varies a little bit. Actual daycare centers, we've got quoted $500 a week easily, which is just a lot. So having the child care grant, I can't stress it enough. It's everything. The child care grant supplements what I can't pay. So right now I'm working part-time. I generally work about 20 hours a week after school. And the child care grant helps supplement what I can't pay. Like I said, I pay $300 a week. I'm already underwater. Along with loans and everything else, it's security. It's one less thing that, as a mom, you have to worry about. You already have so many decisions you have to make during the day, and worrying about loans and childcare and furthering your education, it's nice to know that the child care grant is there to help alleviate some stress. So that's why I support this change.
All right,
thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Mm-hmm. Members? We commend you for the load you've got. That's pretty amazing. But and you're studying to be, tell me.
I do HVAC service, residential furnaces and ACs.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Oh. Good. And I the other testifier, maybe I should ask.
I am studying political science, pre-law major.
Wow. Good. Both of you had good goals. Any questions?
Thank you.
Oh, Representative Whelan, you had a comment or question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did have a question / comment, but I think it probably would be better addressed offline. So I'd love to connect with you, Representative Omar. In particular, we heard a bill on child care licensing this morning in civil law, and just wondering how this might be connected. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Looking forward to talking to you, Omar.
All right. Then, Representative Omar, would you like to renew your motion?
Chair, members, you've heard the importance of this bill, the need for child care support, and the need for our students to feel like we care and that we're invested in their success. We already know that there's a high burden of college tuition rising and the burden of taking out student loans because of that. Child care should not be added to that. And so whatever we can do to elevate, to alleviate some of that stress, I think we must do. And so I renew my motion to include House Number 2257 into the omnibus bill, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Okay, it will be laid over then for possible inclusion. Thank you to the testifiers. And we move on to House File 1577. Representative Omar, do you want to change chairs or stay where you are?
No, I'm fine.
You're fine, okay.
And I think this might be going to HHS.
This will also be laid over.
Oh, this will also be laid over.
Same motion, 1577, will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay, wonderful. House File 1577, support for post-secondary students who are pregnant or parents, is a bill I brought up because I myself was a student parent and understand the importance of providing the kind of support that this bill asks for. We are all acutely aware of the need for post-secondary education so that our young people can get the jobs that pay a living wage. The crisis in child care system, with child care being neither affordable or available, we just heard from the testifiers in the previous bill, the crushing student loan debt and the struggle of parents in balancing work and family caregiving responsibilities. All of these challenges join together to form formidable challenges for post-secondary students who are parents of young children. Nationwide, there's 4.8 million college students who are parents of dependent children, about 27% all college undergrads. The vast majority of these student parents, 71% of them, are women. About half of these students are single parents. Single-parent students are more likely than traditional parents to be the first in their families to attend college, have low incomes, work full-time, attend school part-time, and need remedial college coursework and experience domestic violence. Student parents also tend to have higher student loan debt other than other students and often live in poverty. During the 2011-2012 school year, nearly 43% of student parents, around 2 million students, lived below the federal poverty level. The challenges faced by student parents, especially single parents, result in their being much more likely than traditional students to drop out of college. The proposed bill has two main sections. The first section requires post-secondary educational institutions to provide pregnant students and student parents of young children with fact sheets on their legal rights and list of resources for support. The resource list will include referrals for pregnancy-related health care, child care, transportation, and housing. This information must be available in appropriate languages to reflect the primary language of the student body. The second section of the bill provides grants for comprehensive support programs for secondary low-income students who are either pregnant or parents of young children to help these students enroll and succeed academically and graduate. And to that, I will have our testifiers come up and give a little more information on that.
All right. Ask them to come down. Welcome back.
Thank you. Susan Warfield again, University of Minnesota.
I have directed the program at the university, the Student Parent Help Center, for 17 years. And as I had said previously, my entire adult career has been spent helping low-income families in some way get out of poverty. I have never seen in any of the jobs, I've worked K-12, I've done mental health work, I've never seen a greater inoculation against poverty and many of the other social issues that we deal with every day than mothers, single moms and dads getting a college education. Our program serves single mothers, dads, and married couples. Typically, our largest population has been single mothers. They tend to be the population that has the greatest impact from a first degree. National research shows that a college degree positively impacts the lifetime earning potential of single mothers more than any other population, and I would argue that more than any other intervention. We have even seen college attendance be the motivating factor for many of our students fleeing domestic violence situations. We in the Student Parent Help Center see each day the significant achievements of our students. We also have existed for almost 50 years as a standalone Student Parent Help Center, so we are able to see our data and the benefit of the programming actually affect our graduation rates. Nationally, student parents graduate about the percentage is 36%. Of students with children complete a college degree of the total population. In our program, we see that's almost doubled. We have a 56% rate for four-year graduations, which is higher than the national average for all students, and a six-year graduation of 72%. And we really do feel that that is because the broad-ranging programs that we offer, because students that become involved with our program attending the University of Minnesota do get the information that Representative Omar has talked about, their legal rights. We do a lot of Title IX advocacy. We do advocacy within they're negotiating with their professors. We are the portal for the post-secondary child care grant. So at many institutions where there is not a standalone program, a student just has to find out on their own about the post-secondary child care grant. They may have to walk into financial aid and hope they ask the right person for the application. We actually hand deliver the applications and pre-screen the students every term and mail the applications directly to them because we know they're so busy. So we have a really high rate of participation in that particular program. We also have had years of some reports and testimonials from our own student parents speaking to the fact that they could not have graduated without our support and without the peer-building community that we have from the central location on our campus. And lastly, we just see it every day in the outcomes of our students who quite frequently do maintain contact with us. We've had single moms go on to medical school and other professional programs, a wide range of students seeking graduate degrees. We've seen our parents leave and be able to buy houses, get steady employment, and of course have good, better benefits for their children because of that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, go ahead with whoever's going to be first.
My name is Jessica Hurdle. I am in support of this change. I believe that if there were more support, there was more more support, there would be more people that would attend college. When I first applied at Dunwoody, I was extremely nervous. I was going into a male-dominated career that not a lot of women go into, and I was also very nervous because it's college. It's the first time I've ever applied it anywhere. I was instantly relieved when I received a call from Maggie Whitman. She's
a scholarship coordinator at Dunwoody for the WITC program. Just having her support, knowing that if I had any questions or anything that I needed, I could call her and she would find me the right resources, was very essential for me. So I do think that any support, any information, anybody that is willing to be there or be in Maggie's position, that just being support is very, very important. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Right. My name is Maggie Whitman. I'm the Women in Technical Careers Program Manager at Dunwoody College in Minneapolis. I'll actually be reading a statement on behalf of one of my students who wanted to be here but is at work currently. So, my name is Gianna Madison. She writes, Maggie Whitman is my mentor for the Women in Technical Careers Program at Dunwoody College. She'll be speaking on my behalf today as I'm unable to attend due to a scheduling conflict with work. I would like to start by giving you a few figures. 1,194, 12, 14,328, and 1. While these numbers may not seem to be relevant, for me as a single mother, they are both relevant and detrimental. $1,194 is the amount of money that I spend out of pocket each month on daycare. 12 is the number of months that I have to figure out how to juggle day-to-day expenses, school tuition, medical expenses, and any other unexpected or unforeseen expenses that may come up in between this time. $14,328 is the amount of funds that go toward childcare on an annual basis, and 1 is the number of children that I have. I have a beautiful, healthy, intelligent 5-year-old named Gabrielle, who happens to be the biggest blessing that I could have asked for. Gabrielle is my inspiration to continue to push harder to pursue a professional degree. She's pursuing architecture, by the way, so that I can make a better life for her and myself. She is also the reason that I cannot, with good conscience, choose a lesser quality daycare because of the expense. Previously, Gabrielle attended a daycare that was less expensive, but I had an unsettling feeling in the pit of my stomach because of some questionable practices and safety concerns. I had to make the decision to enroll her in a slightly more expensive daycare in order to have peace of mind that she was in trustworthy hands, receiving quality curriculum and nutritious food. No parent, regardless of age, beliefs, race, background, religion, or any other factor, should have to make the difficult decision to send their child or children to a less expensive or even an unlicensed daycare because they are in a bind financially. I have a strong support system with my family and even at school, and for that I am thankful, but for many this is not the case. I can only imagine the struggle that mothers with no support system, no financial assistance, and even multiple children face. As parents, we are faced with enough tough decisions, but we should not be forced to make compromises that could potentially be detrimental to our little ones. Passing these bills would help alleviate some of the financial burdens that parents are faced with, which will allow individuals to focus more on their schoolwork and their families. I am grateful that these bills are being addressed because even though you may not ever see the benefits or the impact firsthand, I would like you to know that your decision to pass these bills is making a difference, which in turn can and will have a ripple effect on our communities and our cities. In closing, on behalf of myself and other parents, thank you for the opportunity to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you. And one more.
Kabbalah Jenrick, St. Catherine University again. So like I said before, I have 2 children, Mary and Michael. They're 10. My son is 10 and my daughter is 11. And having kids, as we all know, comes with a whole laundry list of expenses. Medical bills, dental bills. Now that they're at the age where they're doing sports and extracurricular, which is not cheap, and a lot of the times you don't get any scholarships for that. When my children go to sports or when they do anything like homework or they're doing projects, I always tell them, do your best. Do not fail. But it's really hard to tell them, do not fail, when you yourself are afraid of failure. And at St. Catherine, we happen to have Access and Success, which is a program for student parents where you can go and find resources. You can go and you can have somebody to talk to who knows what you're going through. There's a booklet where you can contact other students for babysitting. It, it creates a whole community of parents, students that come together and root each other on for success. My husband is also a full-time student, so as you can imagine, trying to pay for both of our tuition, everything else that comes with raising kids, it's pretty hard, and poverty is hard. It's hard by itself, let alone trying to raise children and going to school and showing them that education is important, and you can, and if you put your heart at anything, you can be successful. And having access and success at my school has helped me in so many ways. I remember last Christmas when I couldn't afford any toys for my kids. And to me, it was okay because I taught my kids to understand that there are things beyond materialism. But it was still a moment where you realize, wow, you think you're failing as a parent. But then Access and Success had decided to gift a few toys for them and give us a few gift cards for, like, Cub and Target. So I was able to put some more gifts underneath the tree. And to me, as a student parent, that really brought my morale. Another thing that Access and Success has helped me, too, is an emergency grant. I remember in January when my husband was switching jobs and he didn't get paid in time, I didn't have any money for gas to come to school, and I live like 40 minutes away from the campus. And it was between me having gas money to go to school or dropping my class. And I have spoken to Beth in Access and Success, and she gave me a $200 emergency gift card for gas. And I was able to complete my course that month because of that. And it just made such a big difference to me to have a place to go to, knowing that you can get emergency grant if you need it. You do have a shoulder to cry on if you need that. You have resources. You have people that know what they're doing. You have a community that's here to support you and make sure that you are successful as a parent. Because for me to feel that, I am truly able to pass it on to my children and let them know that there is somebody there to support me along the way so that I can support you along the way. So I support the two bills today. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for being here. I don't know if there's other testifiers. If not, Representative... Oh, who was asking? Oh, I didn't see your hand. Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, the question is for you. The appropriation is to the Department of Health. So does the bill have to go to Health and Human Services? And it's curious that is it coming out of our account or is it coming out of the HHS account?
Just bear with me for a minute.
No, that's okay.
That's a possibility if we'd like to send it to HHS.
Mr. Chair, my concern is that I would like to keep as much money in your account as possible, but since the appropriation is going somewhere else, I'm confused. And I don't think the author of the bill wants to be confused either as to where the money may be going and coming from. If the chair of HHS wants to have this in his account, that's fine, and we'd have more resources for other things. But that's apparently where it's going to go.
If the committee thinks that's the way to go, we'll change the motion then and send it over there to HHS. I probably should confer with the author as well. And Representative Albright wants to weigh in. So you have the answer.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Pulaski, acting as the Vice Chair for Health and Human Services Finance, we have 45 bills yet to consider before the end of deadline. Without any target yet known to man or woman on this earth. So you can certainly change the referral to Health and Human Services Finance, but it would have to go through policy as well, I would imagine. And we would not have met deadline on the policy side, I don't believe, for this to be an appropriation in the finance bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, I've been keeping a running total in this committee of what we've stacked up as you know, appropriation so far. I've got about $642 million. And if someone else is going to take an appropriation for a good program, it's fine with me. I understand your problem, but we're racking up quite a total here, too, and we're not done even with the bills for today. And some bills don't have an appropriation yet that we've already heard, and they could be significantly large. I'm just saying if it's going to the Department of Health, it's not going to what are traditionally higher ed accounts. So unless you want to lay the bill over and then maybe amend it in some way that it would come out of a higher ed account. And I don't want to do an amendment now on the fly. I'm not a big fan of on-the-fly amendments. But certainly the bill could be laid over here, and perhaps a way could be figured out to keep it in an account that is within the committee.
Okay, we need to hear from the author. I think she has some advice.
The appropriation, from my understanding, and I think there's someone here from the health department, it's a federal grant that goes along with this bill. So we wouldn't be appropriating money, at least from what I understand.
Is there someone that can verify that?
Mr. Chair.
First of all, right.
Mr. Chair, if this is an MDH, DHS, or otherwise, it's got to go through Health and Human Services. So the re-referral has to go to HHS Finance.
All right.
Yeah.
Representative Omar, would that be acceptable to you? Well, Representative Zerwas even has some information for us.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members. You know, just to be clear on line 3.26, section 3 of the bill, the appropriation is for the 2018-2019 biennium, is appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Health. So, yeah, this has to go to HHS Finance. And it is an appropriation out of the general fund.
All right, I think that's where we're headed.
Okay. Sounds good.
If there are no other testifiers, then we'll change the motion. That House File 1577.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to move that we send House File 1577 to HHS Finance.
All right. That's the most Representative Plowski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Omar, I would suggest it's going to go there, but you might want to work on this bill a little bit and figure out if you want it in this committee, it's going to have to be funded a different way. So the intent is good. It's just that there are rules, and this is a big one.
I look forward to having your guidance on that. Thank you.
Okay, and House File 1577 then will be referred to the HHS Finance Committee. Now, we need a vote on that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right.
Thank you.
There it goes. All right, Representative Poppy.
Good afternoon.
This is the most delightful committee in the entire legislature. I just didn't know that.
It is. Absolutely.
It's pretty close to the Ag Committee. HHS, we want to dwell on that. So.
They're all good.
So we know who you are, but for the tape.
Sure. I'm Representative Jean Poppy from District 27B. And thank you, Mr. Chair. This
I should probably
want to do something with this bill.
House File 2226. I move that will be laid over for possible inclusion. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2226 is an Ag Education Loan Forgiveness Program bill. This is a bill that allows students and graduates from Minnesota universities who are employed as Minnesota teachers in ag education to be able to have a loan forgiveness up to $3,000 per year for a total of 5 years if they end up having loans that would last that long. And the reason behind this bill is the shortage of ag educators in the state of Minnesota, and this is one way to help to deal with that deficiency of ag educators.
Do you have any testifiers?
I do not.
Okay.
I just bringing forth this bill and appreciate your support.
Anyone from the Office of Higher Education have anything to add? Pretty straightforward.
It is.
Yes. Any questions from members? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppe, just a curiosity in terms of what is the student loan debt load typically for an educator in the ag field?
Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, I would say that the student loan debt could be anywhere from $3,000 to $20,000 per year, so it could be potentially $60,000 to $80,000, and on the high end, if they're, it depends. We have a number of students who are sitting in the audience. They aren't necessarily ag education students, but depending upon how much loan indebtedness how much they take out, it can be fairly high.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Poppe. Is there any responsibility for a tenure in the ag field in terms of teaching that they have to continue in order to receive? I'm probably missing it in the language of the bill, but if you could locate it for me.
Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it does indicate, Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, does talk about the eligibility that they need to be a qualified teacher. And it there is... I know that it's here.
We have a with Paul Representative Williams for the answer.
He finds it faster than I would.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, so the bill, the eligibility requirements require you to be a qualified teacher. That includes being employed in a non-administrative position teaching agricultural education. And then in the loan forgiveness section, it says that you're eligible for $3,000 of the balance of your qualified loans for each year that you meet the eligibility requirements. So presumably you'd have sort of one award of $3,000 per year that you were teaching.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other questions? Hearing none, we'll renew that House File 2226 be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Christensen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Can they worry for a minute? I thought they were leaving.
No, they're rallying.
Okay. For those that are here, we'd like to thank you for coming. It's always nice to have an audience. So, Representative Christensen, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 2313 for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Omnibus Bill.
All right. Go ahead and tell us about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2313 is part of the Christensen Cuts College Costs package of bills we're going to hear today. And this attacks the tuition piece of it at two-year colleges in the Minnesota state system. And to talk a little bit more about it, we have some students here to testify.
All right. Welcome.
Hello, Chairman Ornes. Before we get to the students, just real quick to piggyback off of Representative Christensen, I'm Angelique McDonald with MSCSA, and we are here today, of course, to ask for a 1% tuition reduction for the two-year colleges and universities. We do recognize that this is a big ask, and it has a very big fiscal note, which we would kind of question. But be that as it may, we're going to make the ask just the same. And we have some amazing students here to share kind of what they're living through and what their situations are. So I'm going to hand it over to our president, Minda Nelson.
Okay. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Chair Nornes and committee members. For the record, my name is Minda Nelson. I am the president of the Minnesota State College Student Association. My peers and I are here today to represent the 180,000 students from every corner of the state of Minnesota. I want to thank you for your time to listen to us speak today in support of House File 2313. Passing this bill is the most direct way that we can improve accessibility to higher education in our state. A two-year degree has become the bare minimum requirement for the vast majority of jobs. These days, even McDonald's requires a two-year associate's degree to get a mid-level management position. Public two-year institutions are the access point to higher education in the state of Minnesota. And for most of our students that attend our colleges, the choice is not between the state, public, the local, private institution. It's really between attending your local public school or not attending at all. Our students are the members of our state that are working to become the nurses, electricians, and accountants that our workforce needs, but many of us cannot make it to graduation because we simply can't afford it. The skyrocketing cost of tuition and fees is the greatest threat affecting community and technical college students. Minnesota has the third highest tuition in the country for two-year colleges, and a large portion of our students are low income, where every penny counts to pay for the hospital bill, car repair, or other life challenge that comes their way. When a student is already struggling to pay for food, rent, and tuition, even a minuscule hurdle in life can cause them to drop out of college. Today, we're asking for your support in a 1% tuition reduction for community and technical college students in Minnesota. We want to thank you for increasing the funding to Minnesota State System and the tuition limitations implemented in the past years. Our students are currently paying 1% less than those who attended college 4 years ago. But we need to build on this momentum and act further to reduce the financial burdens our students face. When financial aid increases can help, the only sure way to guarantee students are not prevented from college success due to financial concerns is to use the best form of financial aid, which is low tuition. I personally come from a low-income household. I moved back home to afford college and wound up paying a large majority of the bills for my dad, siblings, and myself to live. I was reliant on my financial aid to fill in the gaps, but I wasn't Pell eligible and did not have the time to commit to a work-study position. Instead, I worked at Menards and T-Mobile for 30 to 40 hours a week. Instead of being I took out loans and paid out of pocket as much as I possibly could to make it work, and as a result, I had many days where I forgot my wallet at home because I wouldn't be able to afford lunch or filling my gas tank anyway. Today, I have $18,500 in debt, and I don't know how I'm going to pay for that once I graduate. Loans are very scary for me. But with me today are other students that would like to share their personal reasons for supporting a 1% tuition reduction.
All right. They're welcome to come on down. Are they all going to testify, Representative Christensen?
We don't have all of this testifying for this particular bill.
Okay. All right. There'll be maybe other opportunities, huh?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Welcome, and please identify yourself for the record.
Hello, Chair Nornes. My name is Samantha Crea. I'm a student at Anoka Ramsey Community College. I support the 1% reduction in tuition because I have never benefited from financial aid. The FAFSA requires you to put your parents' financial information in, even if they do not financially support you in any way. My dad makes too much for me to receive aid, but he does not have the resources to help me pay for college. This year is the first that I have received any state or federal support. My first year of college, I was in an unsteady living situation where I did not feel I had a place to call home. I was living out of my car for several months or jumping from house to house, depending on the week. I was working 40 to 50 hours per week at a personal care assistant living home to pay for living expenses and to try to save up enough for my next semester. I have also applied for dozens of scholarships, but I have only ever received one for $1,000. I had to borrow money to make ends meet, and now I currently owe $8,000 in debt. Last semester, any money I had put aside for school, I had to use in an emergency situation. Now my father allows me to live under his roof for free, but I am taking 14 credits a semester, and I work about 15 hours a week while trying to find additional ways to make money. I am still barely getting by, as I only spend money on necessities, and I cannot currently allocate any money towards school. Any cut to my tuition would benefit my life as of right now, as it is difficult to make a buy every day. I'm at the point where if there is any increase in costs, especially in my schooling, I may not be able to complete my degree or pursue my dreams. Please show your support of Minnesota's future by reducing tuition by 1%, and thank you for your consideration.
All right. Did you say where you're going to school?
Anoka Ramsey Community College.
Okay. All right. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And who's next? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Narnas and committee members. My name is Sinai Wubna, and I'm originally Ethiopian Eritrean. I live in Minnesota, in Austin now. I moved here 2 years ago. I lived in Kenya as a refugee for 16 years. And I am attending Riverland Community College in Austin as of now, and looking to pursue my LPN, Associates in LPN. I go to school full-time and have multiple jobs to be able to afford living and college expenses. I work as a part-time CNA at a nursing home in Austin. I have a work-study position in student services on campus, and I'm also an on-call interpreter for the Austin Public School District in the Welcome Center. Even though I have multiple jobs and receive some financial aid, I still have to take out loans to be able to attend school full-time, so that I can finish my education in a timely manner. It gets difficult balancing between school, family, work, and involvement on campus. I sacrifice time that I could use to study and spend with family, working. I wanted to be a nurse so that I could help people and give back to the community. I urge you to support students like me by a 1% tuition reduction. Thank you for listening to me. For your support.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Nornis and committee members. My name is Jenin Kellogg, and I attend Normandale Community College. I am actively involved on campus, and I am the Secretary for Normandale Student Senate and Student Life. I am here today to show you my support for 1% tuition reduction for the two-year colleges and universities. Originally, I began my studies as a physics major with an intent of working in engineering. I had taken almost all of my math-required courses when I had to take some time off to help my mom, siblings, and save up more money for college. When I returned to school, it had only been a year, but because it had been 3 years since I had taken the ACT, I had to take the ACCUPLACER. Based on my score from the ACCUPLACER, I was told I would have to retake all of my math classes. In the end, to save time and money, I had to change my major. It was devastating for me because I had hoped to one day work for NASA. It's hard to give up on your dreams because of money. It's not something I would wish on any student, but I need to be in the workforce sooner rather than later. So completing any program is cheaper than repeating 2 years' worth of classwork. I support the decrease because tuition at two-year institutions is nearly the same as tuition at some four-year colleges. There is very little incentive to attend a two-year degree or to attend a two-year college for a degree when the cost is so high. Thank you for listening to me today.
Okay, thank you for being here.
And that's all we would have, Representative Nornis. I believe Min State has someone.
Okay, all right, thank you. Members, questions of the testifiers or...
Not.
Representative Christensen.
Maybe not.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Christensen and Representative Pawlowski, I'll use you as an example. You don't like verbal amendments, but I'm just wondering, for the sake of conversation around the table, if I might just offer this oral amendment. Striking lines 1.6, 1.7, and striking up to the period on 1.8. The line would start with for the. Okay, do you want to explain further?
Mr. Chair and Representative Christensen, I think sometimes we on this committee and to previous comments by Representative Pawlowski, appropriations are the easy way to encourage competitiveness between the organizations that provide education to our folks. So rather than an appropriation, we just encourage them to absorb within their existing budgets and made it happen for the benefit of our students by way of encouraging better discipline within their own budgets. And I'm sure Representative Pawlowski might have something to say about that as well.
We'll find out. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, I've got a tentative number on the cost. And I can ask fiscal staff at about 81.3, what would be to the system if we didn't fund it?
Mr. Chair and members, there was a fiscal note completed on this particular proposal. Representative Pawlowski, this bill would essentially fund two components. It would fund the inflationary cost to the system, so the inflationary cost to MNSCU, and it would also fund the revenue loss from the tuition. In a grand total fashion, that would be $81.3 million. In fiscal year 18, that would be $28.2 million, and then following up in fiscal year 2019, that would be $53.1 million in total for both the inflationary and the lost revenue.
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Albright's point, changing it that way, we would have to spend some time on this bill to see what the impact would be programmatically in the system if they were to absorb $81.3 million in cuts, because that's really what you'd be looking at. So I think if we were doing it, there'd be a different set of testifiers up here. I would think Penn State would be up here, and we might even see particularly some campuses that could tell us in detail what the impact would be if we did it that way. And it would be a different bill altogether.
Representative Albright, have you
Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment at this time, but I would encourage Representative Christensen to consider that as he moves this bill forward.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Representative Pawlowski.
And, you know, to the point of what this costs, I already stated about $642 million is my rough total of what we've got before us. That would include this. And that sum I don't think is going to be your target. I got a hunch it isn't. Might be a little bit shy of that. And if it is, then we're going to have to make some hard choices in this committee, too, as to what will be funded and what won't be funded.
Our motion is to hold this over, so maybe my suggestion would be to go through that and confer with the author and whatever else we see important here to proceed with the idea in some fashion, if possible. Yes, go ahead. You have a comment?
Yes. Representative Nornes and Representative Tosky, Representative Oliver, committee members. We recognize that this is a steep ask, like I mentioned when we came up to the table here. But the reality is there is tough decisions that have to be made on every campus, on every level, cuts everywhere. And we do have students that are, quite frankly, living out of cars and need the resources of food shelves. So whatever this committee decides to ultimately do, we need to be creative and we need to be innovative, because the projected numbers that you need for workforce demand for 2020, they're not here in Minnesota. And the ones for 2025, we're not going to see those either. We are failing somewhere, and that's what you all need to figure out.
Just a comment, and just to follow up with Representative Albright's comment that I think it is a really good discussion, and I actually have an article here on how to beat the high cost of learning, and it was from the Wall Street Journal just last month. Just going to read a quote from it, and just food for thought. Representative Christensen would love to talk more about this. But in 1987 op-ed, Bill Bennett, President Reagan's education secretary, hypothesized that tuition was rising partly because of the explosive growth of federal financial assistance, and He observed that as it became easier for students to borrow money or get grants from the government, demand for college grew. This led schools throughout the country to raise fees aggressively. Interestingly, from 1840 through 1978, a period when federal aid was non-existent or very modest, inflation-adjusted tuition rose about 1% a year, according to the analysis of the available data. And the Higher Education Act of 1965 created small loan and grant programs, which were enormously expanded in legislation signed by Carter in 78. And since then, federal data showed that college tuition has been rising roughly 3% a year. If tuition after 1978 had grown only as fast as it did in the preceding four decades, going to college today would cost half of what it does. And what I see here, I feel like sometimes an elephant in the room of the federal government and the grants that we get from the federal government and how that affects the cost of college and tuition. And then often folks come to state legislatures and all across the country want the state legislature to kind of make up the difference. And so it's this give and take of we want to help students. Absolutely, education is vital and important, but keeping in mind there are other issues and problems. Going back to, I think, this issue that was noted in 1987 that we, I think, need to have some more serious conversations about as we're going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, just to remind the committee that during the recession, we made historic cuts to higher ed, and you chaired during part of that, and you unfortunately had one of the numbers that a chair would dread to have to deal with. We went from the middle of the pack, we were, I think, 25th before the recession in two-year tuition, and now we're third highest. I've always thought that since we made the cuts and we made the students absorb them, and to the shame of the systems, when they testified that they could absorb the cuts. There was no testimony to the fact that there would be a harm as a result of the cuts, and now we know what the harm is. The harm is debt, record debt, and also inaccessibility. So I think that's part of the dynamic that we have here, too. I'm not arguing against making the investment, but I think we should find out, or we should revisit the fact that we made some tough decisions. We took money away from higher ed, and we put it on the back of those students. And I think that was an inappropriate thing to do, and I think the time is now to say we should start to relieve the burden. And I'd put it this way if we want to do it nationally. We could bail out Wall Street. We could bail out the banks. We could bail out the automotive. We could even bail out real estate. The group we haven't bailed out is this group, and we took record amounts from them. So I think that has to be a consideration, too.
Should point out we have had frozen tuition for 4 years now on a little, about 0.5% decrease this current school year, I believe, except for the university. That has not been the case there. So, Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair. And maybe this is a question for Representative Pawlowski. I'm wondering, when we talk about being the third highest, what is the average cost for a two-year education?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to take a look. We've been monitoring this, so this is sort of a moving target, too, and I bet one of them would know. I would say this to Representative Nornes's point, though. For a time, we were second, and now we've moved to third. I think that's partly because of the investments that have been made in those incremental reductions. Now, that's a small movement, but it's still a significant move. So it's going in the right direction.
Right. All right. Representative Haley, were you done?
Can I make one more comment? Chair Nornes, thank you very much. I just wanted to comment on a student who had fulfilled math requirements and then had to take a year off to work and came back, and those weren't honored. It may be more complicated than what I heard, but I think we need to call that out, too. That's a travesty. And we've talked about that in this committee before, that the systems have to work with students on prerequisites that maybe don't need to be repeated. So I just wanted to support that student who had that experience, and that should not be happening.
Student-friendly, we need to stress that, I guess. So, Representative Pryor, do you have a question?
Thank you, Chair Nornes. I just want to also, our committee is higher ed finance and workforce readiness, and I think particularly Representative Haley always reminds us of our need to have a workforce of the future and not of the past. And, you know, as technology changes, as our, you know, what we need in the workforce, the higher thinking skills. So I know that what we're investing now and what you're bringing forward right now, it's not just about the individual students, but it's also about Minnesota's future that we're talking about, too. So appreciate the testifier's comments, and thank you for being here today.
Representative Christensen. Oh, Representative Lean, I didn't see you there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a question for staff on the fiscal note here, actually. Now, taking a look, it says the inflationary expenses are only applied to 18 and 19. Could we also assume that those could be applied to 20 and 21, and thus in the out years, the costs would go up that much more?
Mr. Saber.
Representative Lean, I couldn't speak to the increase in the out years, but as you're aware, inflationary costs aren't really a year-to-year item. Inflation, unless there's a major downturn in economic standards, would persist on a year-to-year basis. So there could be an argument made that there are inflationary costs every single year, and obviously this fiscal note points out to that fact. We'd have to reach out to Minsky and talk with them more clearly, and MMB as well, about if there are any particular inflationary flags in the out year biennium.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, to your point, Representative Leyland, I think that could be happening where we're having these grant increases, whether it's state or federal, and schools, private, for-profit, non-profit, public, whatever the case, could be seeing that as a green light to increase their tuition. I know in 2013, we had folks come in from one of the systems, public systems, and essentially had said, you know, we increased tuition because we could. We have a situation where people see higher education as the path to social upward mobility, socioeconomic mobility, where 70% of the jobs right now in the state do require some form of higher education, and, you know, people need these post-secondary degrees to advance themselves. That's, I mean, education is the key to getting into the middle class for some people and getting into higher incomes for other people, and it is very unfortunate, Representative, to use your word travesty. It is travesty. And so I think it's incumbent, you know, as we're taking a look at bills like this, I think it's really incumbent upon us to be asking the systems these questions, asking the EU, asking Minnesota State these questions. What are you doing with these dollars? All these reallocations and everything, where is this money going? We know where it's coming from, but where is it going? How are you ultimately helping out the students? And so, you know, to that point, I guess I do have a question for Representative Christensen, the bill's author. And that would be why, you know, considering this, we're having tuition going up for the U, for Minnesota State, of course, for the privates, which is the state grant separate, but why would this bill only apply to the two-year schools?
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lean. You know, I think, as you know, Representative Pryor talked about, and Representative Haley often reminds us, it's higher education and workforce readiness, and I think we're looking at our two-year schools as a place where we can have college be a little bit more affordable for those that are going on to four-year degrees for the first 2 years, as well as incent students to participate in some of the technical colleges and the trade programs, and really incentivize people to become ready for the workforce and fill some of these jobs where there's lots of needs and lots of jobs available that oftentimes don't require a four-year degree. They require a two-year degree or technical training, a technical certificate program, and I think this bill recognizes that.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Christensen, I appreciate that, and I recognize that, too. And, you know, I think it's really unfortunate that the conversation in higher ed has really been one-sided for the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years, whatever. It has been so much focused on the four-year schools, and I think that's been to the detriment to the two-year schools. Now, on the other hand, we may be starting to tip that balance to the detriment to the four-year schools, where, you know, I certainly, you know, I absolutely support the two-year schools, and I support tuition freezes across the board for the two-year, for the four-year, you know, public, that is. We can't dictate what the privates do so much. And so I think it is short-sighted for us to be only looking at the two-year schools through this type of action. You know, I really don't think we should be, I don't know if penalizing is the right word, but I really don't think we should be penalizing people who want to go to that four-year school. I mean, this something like this, I see giving so many resources to one side of the higher education is really a detriment to the liberal arts four-year university degree, and that prepares people maybe not so much for a job but it prepares people for life. It prepares people for the workforce. It prepares people to think outside the box and become managers and supervisors and run the books and run the companies and really to do a lot more than just the technical skills. So, you know, going forward, I think we just need to be really cognizant of the value of those four-year schools, not to the detriment of the two-year schools. I agree we need to be bringing those up, but like I say, it's not a, I mean, this conversation on higher ed should not be one-sided. We need to be thinking about all education opportunities for people, regardless of what field they want to go into or where they want to get their education. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
McDonald? Mr. Chair, Representative Lean, you know, this bill, you know, I'm the product of a liberal arts education. I got a political science liberal arts degree at the University of Minnesota, and this bill is in no way prohibitive of doing things with four-year colleges. This isn't the higher education omnibus bill. This is a bill that addresses the two-year colleges. So it is this bill, I'm not, but this bill is completely agnostic as to what we should do with the four-year colleges.
McNally, have a comment?
Representative Lean, thank you, Mr. Chair. Our intent behind this is that, by and large, students that come forward to choose a two-year college or university as opposed to a four-year do so because they cannot afford it. These are your first-generation students. They're, by and large, you know, don't have the family background to provide any assistance. And so they're carrying a lot of this load on themselves. And so we're not trying to not include the 4 years. It's just that when you look at your average two-year student, these are the students that need the most help financially. They don't have two working parents. They often come from blue-collar worker families that didn't have any formal education. So we're just trying to nod to that, and they're already paying almost the same price as some of the 4 years on some of the campuses. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Christensen and Ms. McDonald, I don't want to argue with you or anything. I mean, I don't want to disagree that we should be, you know, not looking at the two-year schools or whatever, but I just think we need to be treating everybody fairly in the higher education realm, and like I say, just bringing everybody up. So, thank you.
Representative Christensen, or is there any other questions? Okay. Representative Christensen, anything final on this bill?
I think, Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion that House File 2313 be laid over for possible inclusion in the higher education.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'd like to make just one quick announcement. Our committee time ends at 4:45, and we may, looking at the agenda, not finish. So if we do not finish, which is pretty likely, we will reconvene in room 120 at the Capitol at a time to be selected by me, I guess. So how much time do you need for lunch? So,
dinner.
Or dinner. Supper at our house. Would it be 6:30? Is that? Good. Okay, that's an option. We can just relocate and then continue to plug along. That's okay with me. If everybody else, we've been as diplomatic as I can here and let you make a decision for me,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I just want to give you a heads up as you make your decision that I am already in committee at 5:00, okay. So I won't probably be
you
able to
follow us over there then.
Probably not, but you don't need to plan around me.
When are you done?
But I could meet until 5:00. I'll be done probably around 7:00. So be sure you finish before I get done with my other committee.
You have to be out of here a little before 5:00. We maybe could move a, so. With any, I mean, I don't know. Let's keep going, and then we'll make a decision if we have to. Okay, let's move on then with Representative Christensen again.
Thank you, Mr.
Pressure is on it.
Yeah.
In case you didn't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next two bills are along very similar lines, so I will move House File 2197 for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Omnibus Bill, as well as House File 2198 for possible inclusion.
Okay. As well. Testifier.
There, I am the testifier, Mr. Chair, as well as for House File 2198, there is a brief D1 author's amendment that I will move now.
Okay. We'll find it. Oh, it's an author's amendment?
Yes.
The D1?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. Would you like to just explain it, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill just gets House File 2198 in a similar form, stylistically, as 2197, and just puts the bill in the form I would like it.
Stylistically, is that what you said?
Stylistically, as well as substantively.
Okay, well, that's good. Any questions? If not, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. This is these two bills are the second and third in the Christensen Cuts College Costs series of bills. Students in Minnesota are struggling to pay for tuition, which we heard about in the last bill, but they're also struggling to pay student fees. Student fees are growing at colleges in Minnesota. Fees at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, for example, are approaching $1,000 a year, members, and much of this money goes towards extracurricular activities on campus. And we all recognize the value of these extracurricular activities. I participated in plenty of extracurricular activities in college. But some of these groups at, again, using the University of Minnesota just as an example, Twin Cities, have budgets that are approaching $500,000 a year. This, you know, is quite a bit beyond pizza money. It's quite real money that groups are using to hire staff and pay for quite a number of things. And what's really concerning to me, and, you know, I graduated from college less than a year and a half ago. I was a student at the University of Minnesota, and I hear, you know, all the time from classmates that were struggling to pay for college and working one, two, three jobs, trying to get enough hours to make college more affordable, to pay for hundreds of dollars, $1,000 a year almost, in student fees. That to pay for clubs that they didn't have time to be in because they were working two, three jobs trying to pay for college. Mr. Chair, don't think it's fair. I don't think students think it's fair that students that are struggling to pay for college and are trying to work their way through college are required to pay for extra things for other students that might be more advantaged and have time to take advantage of these things. Mr. Chair, to explain a little bit between the two bills, House File 2198, the differences, and House File 2197, there are a lot of consistencies between these two bills, but they're different as far as how they go about the issue. House File 2197 requires that increases in student service fees will be charged, that are charged to students must be approved by those students in a referendum, and it requires that of public schools in the University of Minnesota and requests that the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota do that, as well as if they decide that's not a priority for them, then the Commissioner of MMB would decide that it wasn't a priority for the state to issue the portion of their appropriation equal to the amount that they collect in student service fees. And that's consistent that, with the DE amendment to 2198, which institutes the same position. What is not consistent is the in 2198, it makes student activity fees optional for students. They can decide, you know, students that really value student service fees, that participate in a lot of clubs, you know, likely would decide that there is value. And I think we're going to hear some testimony about people that are going to talk about the values of student groups and extracurricular activities. And I agree that there certainly is value to these organizations. And, you know, I think those students that that see the value will certainly elect to continue to pay the student service fees, as well as consistent with 2197, students that see the value in an increase in student service fees would likely, consistent with that, vote yes. But Mr. Chair, with that, I'd be open to questions from members, as well as testimony from the public.
Do you have testifiers?
I was the testifier.
You are. Okay, well, you did a good job. Yeah. Any questions? Okay. Are there other folks in the room that would like to testify?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
My name is Mike Dean. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State College Student Association, and I'm here to oppose both of these pieces of legislation, but want to kind of group them together, if that's okay.
That's fine.
It's kind of interesting that a little bit ago, our organization was supporting the bill to make college a little bit more affordable with 1% tuition cut, and now it's kind of unique. We're on the opposite side of this. And really, this is because students overwhelmingly support student fees. The unique thing that happens with student fees is these are actually chosen by the students. We organize kind of that process, and they choose to place these fees on themselves. And really feel that this bill would effectively kill student life offices at our community and technical colleges around the state. It would really have a devastating impact on campuses because it'd lay off many student workers that are supported through student life fees. It would close down student veterans offices, and really end many student athletic programs. Simply said, really, student fees are the lifeblood of our campus community. And since this legislation was introduced last week, we've seen an overwhelming response from students who are concerned about the potential impact. And I think you see that by the large number of students that are in this room. Don't worry, we're not going to have them all testify, but we are going to be brief. But I think they will share some of their personal stories about what these fees mean to them and why really an optional fee is a bad idea. Because these fees benefit everyone on campus. That's really the intent behind them. And want to talk a little bit about how students have really elected to pay these fees because they see the value that it provides to improving the campus and really elevating the student's point of view to key decision makers, whether that's on campus or here at the legislature. And really the mission of the Minnesota State University system is to provide accessible, high-quality, future-oriented education and community service. And our colleges and universities really have a responsibility to develop civically engaged citizens because it's key to really making our democracy work. Student life fees really promote civic engagement on our campuses by supporting those student organizations, and they find ways to help students create positive change in their community rather than just going on Facebook. At a time when our country really is so divided, our campuses provide an important space to discuss important issues of the day. And at a time, and the impact of student fees really goes beyond creating engaged citizens. A study by Gallup found that college graduates identified involvement in extracurricular activities during their college career as one of the main ways that colleges help prepare them for life after college. And it's these skills that they learned that really Minnesota businesses are expecting from graduates. And if we get rid of these fees and make them optional, it will really have a negative impact on the skills that the students receive. The fact of the matter is really that this legislation will create a less prepared workforce in Minnesota. I know I personally benefited from student life fees and the experiences I got on student organizations. And you make it optional, those just fundamentally won't exist anymore. These fees really fundamentally change student lives, and I think you're going to hear a few stories about that. Because student life fees on campus help students develop leadership skills and create opportunities for them to learn real-world experiences outside of the classroom. I now want to invite a few students forward to share their experiences about how these fees have changed their lives.
All right, Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, just quickly a question for Mr. Dean from the Minnesota State Student Association. I was wondering if he could tell us what is the source of the Student Association's funding.
So our funding is completely through student fees. So the students have chosen at each of the campuses to support the Minnesota State College Student Association, and we collect a fee of approximately 34 cents per credit to exist. And our mission then is focused on leadership development, helping students grow as leaders, and then also helping them be civically engaged in their campus and throughout the state.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
I'm just going to say, if we can, I don't know how many testifiers are there, but if you're brief, we might be out of here in time. Representative Walbert.
Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Dean, you mentioned that without student life these fees, that the student veterans office would be closed. But isn't that duplicative because you already have a CVSO in every county?
What's happening on many, Mr. Chair? What's happening in many of our campuses is that actually student organizations or the students on their campus are actually supplementing the work of many of the Veteran Affairs offices. And so they feel like they can't essentially carry all the work that's necessary to help our student veterans. And so students have chosen to put an additional fee on to make sure that the work is done in a thorough manner.
Mr. Chair, so the Veterans Administration would certainly be alerted to that if they're not able to carry the load. Why would they not be asking for fees as well?
Mr. Bean?
Mr. Chair, what's happening is that, again, the federal government, as we know, we've talked about the restrictions that they have regarding funding, so they're only able to carry out so much work, and students support the work to go above and beyond what the federal government provides because they feel it's so important. We're going to actually have a few testifiers that work in student veterans' offices, and I think they'd be happy to explain in more depth about how student fees support their operations on campus.
Okay. All right. Yeah, go ahead. If there's someone else, Representative Christensen, what would be the average fee for? I know it would vary, but is there an average number you could throw out that students are charged for being?
They, Mr. Chair, they vary pretty wildly across both the University of Minnesota system as well as the Minnesota State system, and I think probably the systems could provide us more detailed information as far as the specifics, but I know at the University of Minnesota for 2016-2017, the fee is, I'm pulling it together here, $460.70 per semester. So that would be $920 or so a year.
Okay. Go ahead, identify yourself and then be as brief as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Brett Underdahl. I am the Vice President for the Minnesota State College Student Association, and I'm a student at South Central College in Faribault. While we appreciate the intent of House File 2198 will have on lowering the cost of students' attendance, student leaders across the state are strongly opposed to this legislation. This legislation will severely harm student life activities on campus, especially student senates at our community and technical colleges, whose mission is to ensure students have a voice in what happens on campus. Student senates fulfill a critical role in for students on and the campus and how the institution is run. They consult on campus budgets, giving greater transparency and student feedback to the budget process. They provide valuable opportunities to learn leadership skills, networking skills, and communication skills for the many students involved. I can personally say that because of my involvement in Student Senate, I become more confident in myself and grown as a leader. When I returned to college, I just wanted to go to class and complete my degree. Student Senate has given me the opportunity to apply what I have learned in class and better prepare me for the workforce. Before Student Senate, I was not a public speaker. I would not be here speaking in front of you all today. And it's actually given me the opportunity to practice those skills. I played in public speaking class and I'm able to refine those skills as I learned in class. I'm also an accounting major, and I'm going to also use what I've learned in accounting as well as my role as Student Senate Treasurer when I was on Student Senate on campus. I've been able to learn better how the budget process actually works and apply what I've actually learned in class to what actually happens in the real world. So what House File 2198 will mean students no longer have these opportunities to really apply what they're actually learning in the classroom. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And as a testifier, we have good news for the members of this committee. We get to stay until we're done. How about that? Except for you. Identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Noah Smith. I am from Holly, Minnesota, and I go to M-State Moorhead. I had something written here, but I'll be brief. I work four jobs to pay for college. I work at a Holiday gas station. I'm on the Student Senate. I'm on the Student Programming Board. And I work with the MSCSA, and I get a stipend for those three jobs. When I say that these student life fees are my life, I really mean it. We can do some quick math if you like. That's the accounting major. He can tell you. But for the 4 months last semester that I worked with the MSCSA, I got $80 a month. Last semester stipends for my Senate were about $400, and my stipend for the programming board was about $600, for about $1,500 total, and I paid about $2,100 for tuition and fees last semester for college. I worked a lot. I worked very hard, and student life fees helped me pay for my school because I had three jobs that were student life fees: the Senate, the Programming Board, and then the MSCSA, of course. So these student life fees are necessary, not just for me to have fun, but for me to be able to afford to go to college. I also like to think that these fees, if they are still mandatory, will engage the students even more so. I know they did for me. We have a fitness center fee on my campus that's mandatory, and I can't get out of it. It's about $4 a credit, so this semester I paid about $60, and I never worked out. I do now. I feel really great. I think I look better than I did last semester. And if I could have gotten out of that fee, I certainly would have, and I wouldn't be the person I am today. These fees need to happen. They need to be there for the students to feel something. Once they feel that something, they'll be engaged. They will definitely be involved on their campus, and that's what college really needs to have happen. They need to be able to have a student life. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. You said Holly is where you're from?
Holly, Minnesota, that's right.
Ever heard of Carl's Alexa?
I'm not in town much.
Oh, you're not in town. You're missing something. Let's see, Representative Albright, do you have a question? Representative Christensen, do you want to comment first?
I do, but, you know, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, I wonder if the body of the language in 2197 is lost on someone, because as I understand it, Representative Christensen, if, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but we're not suggesting anything change in your mandatory student life fees, only that it be approved, or an increase in those fees be approved by a vote of the student body.
Representative Christensen?
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, that is true with 2197. You know, and I think that's why we're having a discussion here today, is 2197 would have just increases be approved by the students. In an election, 2198 is a bill to make the student service fees optional for students that see the value. And you know, I think that's part of the reason why we're having the discussion here today is you know, which path should we take? You know, they're really, you wouldn't do both bills. They're really two options, and I think it's good that we're receiving input today as to which direction is best. As far as the last testifier, you know, I think it's really great that the student senate and the program board have gotten you involved, and it's, you know, great that your stipends from that help drive down the cost of college for you. But in order to pay those stipends, their fees are being paid by every single student, so that you can help afford college, and frankly, your cost of college would be less, you know, if student service fees weren't increasing. So, you know, I you know, just want to push back a little bit against the idea of stipends funded by student service fees being a way to reduce the cost of college. It's a way to reduce the cost of college for a very small number of people while raising it for the rest of students.
Okay, another testifier.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jessica Lauritsen, and I work at Hennepin Technical College as the Director of Student Life and Career Development. And my personal story is that I'm the first person in my family to go to college. And when I got to college my first year, it was really scary, and I felt really lonely, and I wasn't sure that I belonged or that I would be successful. And somehow I made it through that first year, and I still look back and don't know how I did that. In my second year, I decided to get involved on campus, and so I joined as many student clubs and participated in many activities so that I could get involved. And my life changed that year. So I gained confidence. I felt like I belonged. I felt like I found a place where I could be successful and that I could fit in. And I graduated with honors from undergrad and went on to be the first person in my family to get a master's degree. And I made it my career to work in colleges in student affairs, to work with students, and to help provide opportunities for them to have the opportunity to engage and to learn, to grow like I did, and to feel like they belong, which was the most important part for me. And
And so I tell you that research shows that students who get involved do better, and we know we've heard that already today, and we know that that's true. I know that's true because of the 13 years I've spent working in higher education student affairs and working with student leaders on four-year and two-year college campuses in the state of Minnesota. I also know that from my own story, and I just want to make sure that students get these opportunities, and optional fees would make that really difficult for us to offer. So thank you so much for your time.
All right, thank you. Just for the record, you're for or against the bill?
I am against.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, next.
Hello, Chair. excuse me. My name is Specialist Jonathan Adam Nerling. I am currently serving in the Minnesota Army National Guard, and I currently sit as the Senate President at Hennepin Technical College.
How did you pronounce your last name?
Norling. N-O-R-L-I-N-G.
Norling. Okay. I didn't catch it the first time.
I was formerly president of the Veterans Club at Hennepin Technical College, and I oppose both of these bills, as this directly affects the countless veterans, current standing service members, and women, and directly impacts the 350 veterans that I currently represent on my campus. And taking complete funding away from this would directly affect our Veterans Resource Center. This center ensures that all of our military servicemen and women receive the help in filling out all of the extensive paperwork needed to receive their benefits that they have been earned by serving honorably for this great country.
Thank you very much. Any questions? And welcome.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Danita Brown Young. I'm the Vice Provost for Student Affairs and Dean of Students at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. The university is very concerned about the impact of House File 2197 and 2198. We believe these two bills, if enacted, will significantly affect our ability to deliver a world-class educational experience for all of our students. Each mandatory student life fee can take one of two paths for approval as part of the budget. General fees, such as the TCF Bank Stadium fee, transportation fee, and capital improvement fees, are recommended to the president for inclusion in the budget after development and consultation at the campus level. Student services fees have a different path. Each of the five University of Minnesota campuses has its own autonomous student services fee review and recommendation process. Each campus's Student Services Fee Committee forwards its recommendations to the appropriate chancellor or vice provost, who in turn reviews and comments upon these recommendations and then submits them to the provost's office. Pending approval by the provost and the president, they are sent to the Board of Regents for review and approval as part of the annual operating budget for the university. For example, the student services fees on the Twin Cities campus is currently generating approximately $33 million annually. Of the total allocation, 93% support student-facing administrative units, such as Boynton Health, University Recreation and Wellness, Student Unions and Activities, University Student Legal Services, the Aurora Center, and the Student Conflict Resolution Center. 3% supports campus student-run media organizations, and 4% goes to student groups. Student services fees fund similar things at the system campuses, with the addition of intercollegiate athletics for each campus except for Rochester. D2 and D3 athletic programs rely on these fees for their operations. At Duluth, student-facing administrative units such as health services, the Kirby Student Center Recreational Sports Center, in athletics receive 86%, student organizations receive 8%, campus departments such as Glen Sheen and Tweed Museum. KMUD Sustainability receive 4%, and the Capital Improvement Fund receives 2%. Unlike other campuses, the University of Minnesota system, Morris has particular challenges due to its rural environment. The vibrant and engaged student body is a hallmark of the Morris campus, and on the Morris campus, over 61% of the students are engaged in at least one of the student organizations on their campus. Students are engaged in every facet of the student services fee process, from student advisory boards and the administrative units to student group officers who prepare annual applications, and from the students who serve on the fee committees that make funding recommendations to the university administration, to student governance bodies who whose advocacy helps articulate student needs and priorities. Additionally, we use a viewpoint neutral process to determine and assess the student services fee, meaning that a public university, when making decisions about student services fee funding, will not take into consideration what position or opinion a student or group of students stands for or advocates. Our ability to respond to student needs and or increase the student services fee resources would be severely constrained if these decisions were limited to the outcome of a campus referendum as proposed in House File 2197. These fees supplement the academic curriculum and are an integral part of the university's educational experience. The nuance, context, supporting information, and rationale for funding decisions are not easily decided by a simple majority of our students voting on a referendum. In addition, these general fees related to transportation, capital enhancements, and the TCF Bank Stadium serve to enhance student life. The transportation sustainability fee on the UMD campus supports the UCAS program so students have access to bus service throughout the city of Duluth, and aspects of the sustainability program such as training and promotional materials. The transportation public safety fee on the Twin Cities campus supports the bus transit program, the campus shuttle, and the campus escort services. If this legislation is signed into law, the university would need to determine which activities funded by these fees across all five campuses were of the highest priority and most critical to the well-being and co-curricular life of our students. The options at that point would be to eliminate some activities, try and implement some using a voluntary pay-for-service methodology, and or to move activities into the operating budget funded by a combination of internal reallocation, state appropriation increases, and or tuition increases. In total, the mandatory student life fees, we believe, would be subject to this legislation, currently raise approximately $50 million, equivalent to an 8.9% in our O&M appropriation, or a tuition increase of approximately 5.5% on all students at all levels. In conclusion, student services fees supported programs, services, and activities create a world-class experience for all our students across all of the five campuses, which directly contribute to our ability to recruit, retain, and graduate students from across the nation and from countries all over the world. Student services fees supported programs, services, and activities are critical to operationalizing our values related to the co-curricular experience, student development, student advocacy, and support. These programs keep students engaged with their campus community, enhance career readiness skills, and provide critical support mechanisms to students in times of need.
Okay. Thank you very much. You. Again, a reminder, testifiers, you can be as brief and to the point as possible, and we have a question from Representative Heitzman. Well, Heitzman, just hold on a second. Representative Christensen has something to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, thank you for coming to testify, Ms. Brown-Young. It's going to put a face to the emails that I would get as a university student. I have a question about, at the university, do you require everyone to pay a parking fee or only those who decide to park on campus?
Representative Christensen, with the parking fee, not everyone pays the parking fee. There is an exception for that specific one, which is determined by the Parking and Transportation Services. They said that they have a criteria.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think it's inconsistent to say that we're, you know, we can't have student fees be optional anywhere, but yet we have a student parking fee, which is optional. And I don't, you know, we have students that use the parking service at the university pay the parking fee. They pay for the parking service. I'm not sure that we can say it wouldn't work to do it the other way. The Minnesota Daily has a $500,000 budget at the University of Minnesota. And, you know, people would say, I think that that adds up to $6.20 a semester per student, and you know, students that find that service valuable, you know, might be interested in paying $6.20 a semester for the student newspaper, while others might not. And I think it's a similar way for you know, even the fitness center. You know, students could choose, they use the fitness center and find it to be valuable, could elect to pay a student service fee, and those that don't wouldn't have to. And I think, you know, there's an inconsistency when we say we can do it for parking, but we can't do it for other student fees.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Christensen, I'm thinking back to a hearing that was in this very room probably almost a year ago. It was a... it was some testimony from the current or maybe just transitioning student council president. And during that testimony, we heard quite a lot of discussion about the debt crisis and the cost of tuition. And we continue to hear a lot about the cost of tuition and rising costs this session as well. And to me, this is one of the most telling pieces of legislation we've had in this committee yet this session. As you listen to the discussion, clearly the debt crisis is real, yet many folks are advocating that taxpayers come and pony up when here we have a student body saying we believe we should be increasing fees in some cases, whether or not all students benefit or not. And one of the mantras this session has been, we need to do what's right for all of Minnesota. Well, in this case, this bill is trying to level the field. I think this is one of the most interesting bills we've heard. It's trying to say, we would like all students who benefit from this to be able to support it, and those who don't benefit, they shouldn't have to participate. And so my question is, Representative Christensen, I'm a graduate of the MinSCU system, now MinState, some people know it as. We handle things sort of differently there. I'm wondering, do you have any knowledge of how student fees are handled, say, in private colleges or not-for-profit colleges? How does that work?
Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, you know, to my knowledge, from what I've seen, the student service fees are quite a bit lower. And, you know, frankly, I think part of that might be that generally in student governments, in the non-private private schools or not-profit private schools, the student leaders, the student officers are not receiving stipends from the student service fees. And I think that there's an inconsistency in that. You know, it's not consistent, you know, that kind of conflict of interest where students are being paid by the very student service fees that they, in some cases, help to set the rates for the student service fees. So I think that's also an area of concern and a good thing that for you to bring up. So thank you.
Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Chair. Is it Ms. Brown-Young?
Dr. Brown-Young, correct.
Dr. Brown-Young, thank you. I've got a couple of questions for you. First is, And I'm sure there's a process, maybe you can educate me, how do students weigh in on discussions about student activities, what we want sponsored, what we want funded? Is there a process where students engage and give input?
Dr. Jones?
Yes. Representatives, members of the committee, absolutely. There's an extensive consultation process. We have what's called the Student Services Fee Committee, and it is comprised majority of students, and it has faculty advisors as well that sit on that committee. They are the ones that who are trained exclusively on implicit bias, viewpoint neutrality, budgeting. So they receive all of the applications, they review all the applications, they hear from all of the administrative units and the student groups throughout the semester in terms of their operation budget and their programming budget. So there is a committee and there is an appeal process that's a part of that entire process. So students are consulted throughout the entire budgeting process for student services fees.
Representative Jessup.
And then my follow-up, and you may or may not have this with you, is it possible you could give us some data points of what were the student fees in, let's say, 2012 versus what are the student fees 2016, or pick any years? How much has that student fee cost grown over the last, let's say, 5 to 6, 7
I have one of the fees. It's this year is about $434 per semester. But Julie Tonison might have that information. If not, we can get that to you. The difference is between 2012 and 2016.
Sure.
We can do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Any other Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Chair Norton.
We all need to get up and stretch, I think.
Yeah, I think so. We're
okay, go ahead.
So I think kind of what the essence of this is, if there is something that's a student campus life, and if that's worth supporting. So obviously it's not something that the state funds, that we're not doing it as taxpayers directly, but we're saying that if you want to go to a college, if you want to go to a two-year college, you know, kind of our entry, or if you want to go to a four-year college that's a public institution, is part of the education campus life. And so I know that some of the testifiers have been able to speak to that and how that sense of belonging, and that's part of your education too, that creating that sense of belonging. And then I guess what we're trying to get at, though, is the process for creating that campus life, because it does cost money. You know, is that transparent to people? Is there input for people? Do students feel like they have a stake in that, and that it reflects what really does work and create something that's important for them and important for their education? And so obviously you can graduate from the University of Minnesota and not feel like that was a transparent process and take issue with that, and that feel like the cost is high. So I think that is an important consideration in this. We contemplate that. We understand that that's what we're talking about. And having come from a private institution, which was well-funded, I know that we had a campus life, and that was a huge part of my education. And certainly wouldn't want to see that difference between public institutions and private institutions to widen. And that part of it is, if you go to private school, you have a campus life, but if you go to public school, you don't have, it may not happen because, you know, we kind of put impediments to funding it. And I guess that's the concern out there, is that these would be impediments to funding a campus life. And I guess my real concern is that if we, you know, obviously if it's optional, then we kind of have this two-tier system. And again, when you're that struggling student, you would be hard to participate and pay those fees. And so the fees would get, for having even the basic stuff, the fees would be higher and higher. And if you're that low-income student, you're less and less likely to be able to participate in it. So in a public institution, if we went optional, we might have a two-tiered system and two-tiered education at a public institution. And so that would be a fear that I have. So, so I do have reservations about these two bills.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pryor, just to clarify, and I appreciate your points, 2198 would make the fees optional. 2197 would require that an increase in the student service fee. So, for example, the student service fee at the University of Minnesota was $460.70 per semester this year. If the university, if the students service fee committee sought to increase student service fees at the university next year, that would have to be approved in a referendum by the students. If the students didn't pass that referendum, there would still be a student service fee of $460.70, which would pay for quite a bit of student life, which I think it does now. There just wouldn't be the increase.
Representative Parker.
Would that be an increase that's above inflation? Or does that, because if we don't count inflation to a student fee, that means that every year we're reducing the student fee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pryor, that would be any increase, but I think students would be very understanding of an inflationary increase. I think we have fantastic higher education in the state of Minnesota, and they are very capable of grasping inflation.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things. First, a question to the testifier. You know, as I'm listening to some of the testimony, and it seems like it's framed up in the context of an educational need. And if it is an educational need, why isn't it a part of the cost of tuition? It doesn't make any sense. And then to Representative Pryor, I know you mentioned coming from a well-funded private school, there may be some misunderstandings, but two-year schools are not an entry point. Across the state of Minnesota, students are getting a phenomenal education at an opportunity to enter the workforce immediately.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Sorry, I misspoke.
Dr. Young, did you have a response?
I would say that 93% of our student services fees goes to services such as our Boydson Health, our unions, these services that really are a part of the overall student engagement, student advocacy, and most importantly, the health and well-being of our students. As we already know, the more students are connected and engaged on that campus and the more that we pay attention to their health and well-being, the more that they will be thriving. I cannot necessarily speak to the nuances and the details of the overall budget of why it's not part of the tuition, but I do know that it is a crucial part of our student services fees to really pay attention to those administrative fees, because only 4% actually go to student group programming for engagement. The majority of our student fees are there to really help students throughout their experience and their journey at the university.
All right.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, and respectfully, you know, students at the University of Minnesota and students across our campuses are counting their pennies, trying to pay for college, trying to pay for housing, trying to put macaroni and cheese on the table. So I'm not sure that it's convincing, you know, just to say that a certain percentage of the student service fee, it goes to these, important things. And if you talk about, putting it towards a student referendum and students didn't approve an increase in the student service fee, it's likely, I would interpret that as a message from the students that they think there needs to be reallocation of priorities and that maybe, a greater percentage needs to go towards, places like the Boynton Health Center and not spending money, which admittedly are not tons of money to it, you and me, but to a student that's counting their pennies trying to work their way through college, it's real money. It's real hours that they're spending waiting tables trying to pay this fee. For example, I'm looking at two of the organizations that received funding this year. Unlimited Dance Marathon received $7,860, and U-Tango Argentine Tango Club received $10,964 this year. And I want to be very clear, I'm sure I could have used both of those clubs. I'm not much of a dancer, but I'm not sure that is something that students that are trying to work their way through college and pinch their pennies, that's something that they find valuable and want to be required to have an increase to pay for that, for those sorts of things.
Representative Haley?
Thank you, Chair. I first thought these bills were pretty simple, but this is getting more and more complicated, and it did fill up my inbox with a lot of constituent comments. So I'm a little bit conflicted on these bills. I guess what's concerning me is I understand student life and all the richness of leadership opportunities and engagement and involvement, and that's a part of college. Out of every
aspect of college. So I understand student fees supporting that. But some of what I've heard makes me feel like operational costs are being hidden in student fees. And whether it's parking or health services, I consider those operational costs of a university. So I'll just leave it at that. But I think maybe that's what you're trying to get at. I don't want to limit student life. I think that's a big part of college. But the other point is concerning.
All right, thank you. Are there other testifiers that would like to come down?
Could I adjust that for a moment?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, just very quickly. All of our fees are very transparent. They are located on our Office of Admissions website, on our one-stop website. We also meet with the students and the families, so every fee is transparent for prospective students and our current students. And like I said, our current student government are very involved in the review of the budget, and it's a very transparent process.
Thank you. Representative Christensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one more question for Dr. Brown-Young. Is it allowed under the university for organizations to use student service fees for electioneering?
Not at this time, no. We just went through a evaluation of our student services fee process, so that would not necessarily fall into a category that would be allowable.
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Brown-Young, so I guess my question, and I'm concerned and to a certain extent about the university, in student groups opening themselves up in this way, but for example, a student newspaper at the University of Minnesota, which receives $488,112 a year, I think this may be per semester, but they, in student service fees, endorsed a candidate for president, and that organization is also a 501c3 organization, which I think, is just something that we need to consider. Students are paying these fees and working their way through college, and I'm not necessarily sure they're being spent wisely.
Then we'll move on to the next testifier. I again remind you to be as brief as possible and hopefully cover maybe some additional territory. And when Representative Christensen mentioned the macaroni and cheese, suddenly I got very hungry. So go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Chair. My name is Abir Saida. I am the student body president at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I am elected by student leaders and the student body to represent their interests, and the U of M and my organization is actually being insinuated here a lot. So I want to talk about a couple of points that I think are going to be a different angle and really address what's being discussed here. First of all, happy spring break to U of M and Minsky. Thanks for being here. I skipped work. I do receive a stipend as student body president. It's a full-time job. I also work two other jobs, so I work three jobs. I don't get a day off to pay for tuition. So I certainly do not think I am privileged in my relationship to student government. Two concerns that I want to bring up. The first is the merit of these bills existing as a whole, which I'll talk about in just a moment. But then I also want to get into some specific points. So quite frankly, when we're talking about the merits of this bill, this is my job to decide, not yours. And I wish that folks like me and the Minsky leaders behind me had been consulted in this process, because we could clarify a lot of the questions that have been answered thus far and are being insinuated in this bill quite a bit. But speaking of my job, I think I do it, and I do it well, so I want to talk about what I've been doing. Right now, I pay $432.18 a semester to the student services fees. 93% of those goes to groups that could be called administrative, academic, or health, which are groups that are considered exceptions in 98 for things that you could opt out of. So the groups that you could opt out of are, theoretically, at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, just student groups, which right now get a whole total of $24.33. So just to repeat that, $24.33. And as an in-state student right now, my total semester cost to go to the U of M Twin Cities as a whole is $10,000. Student government gets a nice $2.41, and I use those $2.41 to actually advocate for the changes and for the revisions, some of which has been discussed here, with folks like Dr. Brown-Young and others at the University of Minnesota. That has included 12 hours in just the month of August and September alone, serving on a committee that students asked for, and then I served on one of the many student seats to talk about student-driven changes to student services fees. That included multiple caps like staff, so one of the points that you brought up. Staff are not going to be covered, non-student staff are not going to be covered, and salaries and wages are not going to be covered by the student services fees process. There are multiple new caps that are going to be covered. There is better financial advising that's going to be streamlined that will be covered, and you know, a few issues more specifically are in the jurisdiction of student governments and student affairs than something like student fees. And I think it's a little bit of an overreach because I get concerned about what other things will then be brought to the legislature that are in jurisdictions like ours. And, you know, this is a really big priority, but when we're talking about, for example, a tuition increase that might come from not funding the U of M, we're talking about significant increases that are not $24 or not $400. The other piece that I do want to talk about quickly as well is the specifics. So first of all, definitions. There are points here about administrative, academic, and health. For us, that's a little bit ambiguous, and that worries me because would our recreation and wellness center be covered? Would IPRESS be covered? Would student government be covered? Would legal services be covered? I don't know. The second piece about choice, well, theoretically, it sounds really nice, and to an extent, I like it. What concerns me is that if students are being able to choose which groups they do and do not fund, groups that serve a minority are likely going to see a loss of funding. And I'm very comfortable saying that at an institution like ours, which is predominantly white, predominantly moderate to liberal, we are going to see a loss of funding for groups that lean generally conservative, for groups that serve our students of color, for groups that serve students with disabilities. I mean, there are a lot of student groups here that serve very essential functions. I also served on a committee that I asked to be created that is now making recommendations for student groups that serve a very specific administrative process, which is the recruitment and the retention of minority students, and finding new forms of funding for them and also taking them out of this whole $24.33. And the last piece that I have a concern about is the referendum. I actually don't disagree with this, but again, doing my job, I have advocated for this at the University of Minnesota, that students vote on the student fee, and I'm doing my job in that regard. But what I don't know is that for my election, for example, a very large chunk of the student body does turn out. In fact, more students turn out for U of M Twin Cities than even some legislative districts. The same cannot be said necessarily for every school in the state, and I do not know if this is going to be a consistent way of being able to have student involvement in the fees process. So I can speak a lot to what happens at the University of Minnesota, but that's not uniform. And we bring a lot of bills to your forefront that talk about affordability, that talk about things like tuition and the cost of living, that talk about unaffordable housing and all the other things that keep moving in and making cost of college difficult. But genuinely, $24.33 is not my highest priority. It is not the priority of students at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities as a whole. We've brought bills that focus on K-12 to higher ed pipelines, streamlining definitions, easing the burden of in-state transfers, and more. I encourage you all to please let me and the folks behind us continue to do our jobs and do it really well. This is now, and I know a lot of people speak from their experiences in their respective higher education institutions if they went to them, and I can tell you what's going on right now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions, then?
Really? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for our testifier. Well, I have a couple of questions and a comment. You know, you talked about if student service fees were reduced or not increased, that might mean a loss of funding for groups of certain political persuasions, specifically conservative groups. According to the Supreme Court ruling, University of Wisconsin versus Southworth, they're required to be administered in a viewpoint-neutral manner, which I think there is a lot of concern over whether the University of Minnesota is doing that. But if the student service fee were to be reduced, the fees would still have to be allocated in a viewpoint-neutral manner, and that would not have an adverse, or if it did have an adverse effect on groups of a certain political persuasion, that would be extremely concerning. And I'm frankly concerned that it's being brought up, I think that's really concerning that would even be discussed. As far as the student service fees that go for the Minnesota Student Association, when I was a student at the University of Minnesota, I was a member of the Minnesota Student Association, and my question would be, what percentage of your budget this year are you spending on food for meetings?
Actually, zero. I defunded all food for meetings.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome very much.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. That was a major priority of mine when I was a student at the university. I think at one time something like 10% of the budget was being spent on very good, very nice food for meetings at the Minnesota Student Association. I have a question about something you said during your testimony about staff, that staff stipends are no longer going to be funded from student service fees, that sounds great to me. My question is, what will be the source of the funding for those staff stipend positions then?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, so that is up to the student groups. Some of them are going to defund staff positions altogether. Some of them have the option to find different sources of funding if they are, for example, nonprofits and things like that. This is a very small number of groups, it should be noted, that have staff members, but that's up to them. The student services fee is not, that's their decision. And also just quickly to address your point about viewpoint neutrality, yes, absolutely, there is viewpoint neutrality, and that is upheld. But it should be noted that many groups are seen by the student body as leaning in a certain direction. For example, groups like MPRG or CFECT, which are funded by student fees, and whether or not they have that affiliation, they are seen that way by students. So if students are able to opt out, what I'm saying is that they will opt out of groups that might not lean in a direction that they like, not that they are being viewed by the Student Services Fees Committee as a whole in one way or another. But please.
Representative Whalen. Representative Christensen?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, so students or student groups will have to decide how to fund staff positions. Is the Minnesota Student Association planning on getting rid of stipends for staff members? And if not, how are you planning on funding those positions?
Go ahead.
So I am the current student body president, so I'm the current MSA president. There will be a new president. Their budget will be voted on by the forum this year before it goes to student services fees and then is approved once again by the forum in the fall. So that is their decision on how they plan on doing that, not mine.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Christensen.
So you're saying that it is now no longer allowed at the University of Minnesota that they could not have in their budget, because to my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Minnesota Student Association receives all of their funding from student service fees. The Minnesota Student Association will not be able to fund paid staff positions.
Mr. Chair, so stipends are different than staff. So if that's we're talking about waged employees versus stipends, that there's a difference. Student groups that are still categorized as student groups under the new processes that we put in place will be limited to five. Minnesota Student Association, along with the Council of Graduate Students and the Professional Student Government, are seen as RSGAs, Registered Student Governance Associations. This is a new category, along with press groups and a couple other groups that are given certain exceptions based on the services that they provide to the student body. And there are some changes to our funding as well, but we are stipended differently than some other student groups.
Representative Whalen,
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Christensen, for bringing this bill forward. And I'm sensing that there's potentially some misunderstanding. I could be wrong, but I don't think Representative Christensen is calling into question the role that you play. I think there's just some philosophical disagreement on the use of student fees, and so I would just encourage you, in particular, with regard to the exchange that I've been hearing, Representative Christensen, as a state legislator, you might disagree with him today on this issue. You might agree with him tomorrow. And so just wanting to make sure the conversation and the tone of the conversation remains amiable. Furthermore, with particular regard to 2197, because there is an election involved where you could have the student body elect to have their fees increased, I think if
that's the case, and the representation of folks here is similar to what the entire student body population would say, that yes, we like the fees, please impose these fees on us, then there's no problem. And so to me, in particular with 2197, I don't see this as being controversial at all. But I do want to just say that I and all of us around this table represent a large range of folks. And we all want to make sure education is funded properly and we place a high value on education in the state. You're asking the university, or you're asking taxpayers to help fund education. And we as a state give the University of Minnesota in particular $1 billion. That is an astronomical amount of money. And so when we're talking about making sure that students have the ability to go to school and to do all these things that are going to further benefit themselves, I was just at the university as an undergraduate and a graduate, I would have really appreciated the opportunity to choose whether or not to pay some of these fees. And as a taxpayer, I know that I think that the people that I represent would appreciate this as well, to say, if you so choose to be involved in a group, go for it, pay the fee. But I don't think it's consistent with the message that we're hearing, that you would like us to increase the funding toward education and also keep these fees going, when this could be a way, this is, I think, a great compromise to say, you know, we'll give a little too. So just something to keep in mind. And again, thank you, Representative Christensen, for bringing the bill forward.
All right. I don't know if there's a response there or not, but I would like to see how many others are waiting to testify. Do you have something new to add to the conversation? I'm just curious. Okay. All right. You'll all have a chance. I'm just curious to see how long we have to be here. That's all. That was from Omar. You're next.
Abir, can you come back? I have the questions for you. Thank you, Chair. So thank you for your testimony. Thank you for being here. I am just curious to know if there are student surveys you all do to figure out what student priorities are.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
If we're talking about the Twin Cities campus?
Yes.
Yep. So we have a couple of surveys that we have the option as student government to put out, but if we're talking about the student services fees process, every revision did include this year multiple surveys that went to students who participate in student groups and students who don't participate in student groups about desires and increases, decreases, what they want to see funded, et cetera.
Yeah. And then as far as... Chair, as far as priorities and things for you to advocate on behalf of the students, is there a survey that you do to figure out what priorities in advocacy that the students want you to do?
As student government?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So we participate in mass student group outreach every fall semester. So we email all 1,000 registered student groups and meet with whoever wants to meet with us. We also send out multiple campus-wide surveys and polls to student leaders asking about their priorities.
Wonderful. And then is there a ranking for the priorities within this survey?
Like a numerical ranking of what students care about?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's actually all testimony-based, so we don't ask them to put it on a scale. We ask them to pick categories and talk about what they have concerns about.
Yeah. How often does concerns about how high student fees come up, do you think?
Comparative to the bulk of the concerns, I guess, I receive, not a lot. When we're talking about finances, some concerns do come up about fees. Most of them come up about feelings about how student groups are funded. Some come up about things like the stadium fee, the transportation fee, and other concerns with fees.
Thank you, Chair. So the same question to Representative Christensen. Was this a concern that came about by students? Because I'm just a little curious about why we're having this conversation about student fees. I have yet to receive one single complaint about student fees being too high or students asking us to work on this particular issue. We have yet to hear from one student who agrees with this being a problem. So I just wanted to know, is this a concern that you're hearing about? And if there are any other committee members that are hearing about this particular concern, I just feel like we're spending a lot of time and energy trying to fix a problem that doesn't seem to exist for most students.
Professor Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Omar, I've certainly heard from students. You know, frankly, I was a student at the university myself a year and a half ago. I'd hear it from students in class. I'd hear it from students all across the University of Minnesota. That, you know, this is something that's hard to pay for. And, you know, we heard that the student government at the university reaches out to student groups about how they feel about student service fees and their questions and concerns. But the people that are generally participating in these groups are going to be much more supportive of higher student service fees than the student population as a whole, because they're generally the ones that are benefiting from the student service fees. Frankly, people that are, oftentimes people that are working three jobs and pinching their pennies trying to make their way through school, it might just not make their priority list to be part of a student group, because, you know, that might mean spending less hours at their job and having to take out that much more money in loans to pay for school. So I would submit to you that that's a large part of the reason for that, and that it's absolutely a concern that I've heard from students. I want to talk briefly about, the salaries and stipends. I apologize if I misspoke and used salaries instead of salaries and stipends, but it's potato, potato. I understand there's a difference between a stipend and a salary, but at the end of the day, it's student service fees that all the students are paying and working extra jobs, trying to work their way through college to pay these student fees in order to pay stipends for student leaders, which I'm not going to ask the question what the student stipends are at the Minnesota Student Association, but I know they were a lot of money when I was at the university, and I find it very concerning that students are having to work hard and pinch their pennies to pay for the student service fee, to pay salaries and stipends. And by the way, I don't know that if this has been changed, but previously stipends could go to people who weren't even students at the University of Minnesota, but students are paying a lot of money in order to pay for stipends for other students that, I'm not sure that they see the value from. And, we could talk all day long about, the value of student life. And I agree. I was an active participant in student life when I was in college. I think there's absolutely value to student life. But there are students that are busting their butt trying to make their way through college, and they don't even have time to participate in student life because they're spending so much time trying to pay the student service fee, waiting tables. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just curious, Representative Christensen, if a particular student opted out of paying this student fee but still wanted to use the services that the other students paid for, would they be carded differently? Would they have like a thing that says they can't come in? How do you propose we take care of that?
Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Omar, that is not prescriptive within the bill, and that would be up to the individual systems and campuses to decide how they would like to administer that. For example, I think it would be pretty simple if you wanted to, for one, they could make it so the entire student service fee you could opt out of, or you could opt out of smaller portions of it. Now, nobody's saying you certainly wouldn't make it so you could opt out of the smaller portions, each individual club. But you might make it so you can opt out of, for example, the wellness center. And so if you use the wellness center, then that's something that you could elect to pay for, much in the way that if you use a parking spot, you can elect to pay for a parking spot at the University of Minnesota. So I think that would be simple. But at the end of the day, the bill is not prescriptive in that way, and there could be inconsistencies among the campuses, how they want to go about that. But at the end of the day, it would be up to them.
Members, I need to point out we have one more bill to do tonight also, so I've got nothing else planned, so, you know, you may have. So, Representative Omar, are you finished?
Thank you. I'll ask my other question.
Okay, Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Here again, a couple of questions, and first to the testifier. I think that Representative Whalen hit on it a little bit, but the frustration is kind of, and I'll just characterize it as anger, coming is really, really hard to understand. Going back to our districts across Minnesota, we're hearing from constituents on doorsteps by the thousands. They're saying, what is happening in Minnesota? Right at the turn, so 1999, the real median household income was at just over $60,000 in the state of Minnesota. Here today, we are currently real median household income, according to MMD, at 60, just a hair over 62 maybe, clawing back to where we were. And we're doing, you know, taxpayers are doing everything they can to keep up. We're seeing huge costs rising in HHS, and we're going to try to do everything we can to help the university and to help MnState. At the same time, where's the thankfulness for the investment that the state and that the taxpayer is pouring into the university? Where's the respect for those folks that are sacrificing and paying that tax bill and hoping maybe that their student may be able to attend one of these institutions? And when they get there, they're subjected to, as Representative Christensen has mentioned, in many cases, really significant costs in student fees. That is worth talking about, Representative Omar. I mean, this is a big issue. And to say that we're not hearing about this in our communities, I have no idea how that's even possible, because we're hearing about costs of education everywhere, from K through 12, from pre-K, all the way through. This is a huge part of the conversation, and it's important. We are basically having that conversation on a daily basis in this committee. And I think Representative Christensen's bill is one of the few bills that's aiming at really doing something to reduce costs and talk about a controversial issue. My hat is off, and I hope the testifier can answer to some of that anger that we feel coming. I don't understand that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I apologize if my frustration came off as anger. I speak from 4 years of personal advocacy experience, and my frustration is coming from folks who are speaking from their specific experiences, as opposed to my experience, which is driven by the students. And I'm not saying that there isn't a problem with the student fee. As I said earlier, there are multiple problems, and I've put in a lot of time into affecting change that will fix them. The concern is that I believe that is the job of the students to work on and of student leaders and student affairs to decide. And the reason that I say that is that this is a student fee that only students in a specific institution or their specific respective institutions pay. And in most of these universities, that jurisdiction falls over student affairs and student governments. And I'm concerned about, as well, the line of questioning that comes specifically towards the Minnesota Student Association, which is our organization, which receives, again, a total of $2.41, which is not representative of the whole experience. If you're looking for a thank you for investing in higher education, thank you. I hope that can continue, and I hope that my tuition doesn't go up in March. And, you know, I understand if there are concerns about my tone, but what I'm saying here is that there are a lot of concerns, and I can speak to those concerns because I do that work on the ground with the student body here. And the Minnesota, the Minsky Student Association and the other student governments that are here, they can speak to their student governments and their student constituencies as well. We are able to talk about what's happening right now on our campuses, and I think that's important, and I don't feel like that was being valued.
Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Ms. Saida, you talked about you hope your tuition doesn't go up, and I hope it doesn't too. But, you know, unfortunately, President Kaler has already said it doesn't matter how much the investment from the state is, the University of Minnesota will be raising tuition. I think that's unfortunate. But it's going to happen, and, you know, I guess I'd invite you to take it up with President Kaler.
Okay. We need to move on to the next testifier. One thing I would urge is that testifiers, if you can hold your comments to about 3 minutes, right? We've got a lot of information already tonight, and we have another bill, as I mentioned before, that we have to deal with. So, welcome to the committee, and
hello,
proceed.
Hello, Chair. My name is Lucino Sosa. I go to Central College. It's a 2-year institution, and what I'm hearing here is they're focusing more on the University of Minnesota, but the 2-year institution is nothing like that. We pay $4.50 per credit at Century College. I'm focusing only in Century College, $60 per semester. So I don't think it's that much. And I'm going to read some of the stuff that it helped me out to be here, to grow as a person. And as a student, color is concerning me. Student life has helped me to network with students from different backgrounds and gave me the opportunity to create a strong relationship with them. Once I joined the Student Senate campus, clubs and organizations in college, the sense of belonging grew up in me. Many students lost interest after the first semester because they feel isolated. But once they join a club, the retention of these students grow. Also, they get better grades and the college experience is more memorable. Student life helps students to succeed in their academic program once they get involved in college activity around campus. They are more markable when they comes to job searching and applying to graduate school. A positive way that student life impacts the students, for example, is the creation of new leaders in college campuses. Adding that some of these new leaders merge to or different Minnesota communities. When I started college, I didn't know what Student Life Center was about. One of my advisors, Jessica Santana, talked to me about Student Senate. I wanted to check that out once there. The friendly environment and the passionate conversation in the Student Senate inspired me to keep learning more about how to help students when it comes to college struggle to get a student around the nation, to improve engagement from the student perspective, to keep educating themselves, to help our communities later in the future. When it comes to college struggle to get an education, I also got involved in different clubs and organizations on campus, such as Century Time Magazine and Brother to Brother Association. During my involvement with Student Senate, I made lots of friends from different campuses, and I still keep in touch with them. Some of the many opportunities that Student Life gives to students is to assist conference in and out of state to keep students engaged with their schooling and learn more about leadership development. Being a leader for me means helping others to become leaders too and help educate more people because knowledge is power. It was a big surprise for me to have the opportunity to go out of state conference where I met people from all around the country. After 2 years, I still have contact with them. I participate in different conferences such as Powers and Diversity, Travelers, Hedge Scholars, SAP National Conference Michigan, MSDSA Assembly representing Century College as the Vice President of Student Senate. Also, I became the leader of Brother to Brother, that is a national association focused on males of color to become role models for each other as well as younger males of color in the community. Joining Student Senate and Brother to Brother allowed me to be the voice of the unheard ones and inspire more students to keep reaching their goals in Century College. Both of them engaged me to stay in school and to keep experience new horizons. This is one of the most precious opportunities the Student Life offers to students on campus, creating solid networkings with other college students around the nation and improves engagement from the student perspective to keep educating themselves, to help our community later in the future. The student voices are important because we're the ones who are getting affected by the removal of the student life in campuses. I don't want to think that you're going to get rid of this precious opportunity that will help many students to succeed in life. We, the students, want to remind Christian Anderson that at one point in his college life career, he was benefited from the student life money. I dare to add that this person served on the Minnesota Student Association and featured as a member of the University of Minnesota Marching Band. Also served as a treasurer of the Minnesota College Republican from April 2013 to February 2014, given the opportunity to grow as a person, to take his leadership involvement to overcast the younger generation to college students. With this proposal of these bills, student involvement in campuses activity help us organize better and create civic engagement to be active citizens and for the future. With passionate students like me, we can create better communities in Minnesota, fair and equal for everyone, without taking away the opportunity to grow from younger generation, because we are the future of this country. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you, Chair. Could you tell me, when you enrolled and you became a student, did you feel like you didn't have a say in having to pay this, that you needed help from the legislature to come and stand up for you, or did you feel like your institution gave you access and you felt like you had a say over how much your fee is and knowing where that money was going to go?
No. Nobody like suggests anything to me once I start college. So there was no information. So that's why I'm here to talk about like what's really going on in college's campuses. It's not like somebody hand me out, this is how much you pay for this. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like that. So that's why I want to point out that some of the private colleges that they're saying that it costs like so much to pay for student life. And it doesn't help the student. Of course, if that's a private college, I don't think many people want to pay for $160. Mm-hmm. But in a two-year institution like Century College, it really helps the students like to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When you started and you saw that your fees were there and you knew what your student fee was, and did that seem fair that you as a student were paying that and it wasn't a burden to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. Do we have another testifier ready to come down or over? Or again, be as concise as possible. We don't want to cut you off, but we do have a little time crunch here. Sir, go ahead. Identify yourself, please.
My name is Sheena Marie. Mr. Chair, representatives, thank you so much for hearing what I have to say. Throughout this whole hearing, I've been hearing, how much does it cost the individuals? Today, I want to bring forth, what is the rate of return on those costs? For me personally, when I first started my education at Dakota County Technical College, I was brought into an orientation session. During this session, I was informed of these costs. We split up into different groups to show the importance of where the money is truthfully going. As I did have a choice in order for me to leave the college or say that this has value. That's why I stuck around. Now I am reaping the rewards and spreading those rewards to all students. That's the rate of return. Within the educational system, there are two important elements. There's a classroom setting, which is very, very important because that's why we're in college. The other particular element is within supportive groups, events, student life. They are equipping not only myself, but my fellow students with the tools necessary to become effective participants within the college life. I'm going to tell you another thing as far as the rate of return. I can only tell you what happens at my particular college, Dakota County Technical College. I cannot tell you what happens at the University of Minnesota, but this I can tell you, and that is, if a student goes hungry, we have a program that's in place in order to help the student. That comes out of these fees. There are activities that promote leadership, character building, which is essential in our marketplace. I totally oppose this bill because of the fact that you're not only taking away something of value to myself, but you're taking away something of value to the whole student body at Dakota County Technical Institution. It's going to be a ripple effect. And for that, I hope that you will take my plea in earnest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Who is next?
Representative Martin. For the record, my name is Minda Nelson. I am with the Minnesota State College Student Association. I was, last year, the Student Senate President at Anoka Ramsey Community College, Cambridge campus, and I have been active in student life since the very beginning of my education, specifically because I noticed the fees. I have to say to Representative Christensen, I completely commend you for identifying all of the needs and all of the issues that come with the cost of higher education to students. I am definitely not against you on that at all. As for the two bills that have been brought up, I do have to say that they don't fix the problem, and for a number of reasons. One, I think that the understanding of how fees are applied at the two-year college level and the four-year college level are misinformed at this time, and I will open up just a brief window of that. Students are heavily included in the fee process at our two-year institutions. It is by state statute for the Minnesota state system that we are required to be there. In fact, as a Senate president, I had the right to be a co-chair of the Student Life Budget Committee, where we, as students, were the only votes that actually set that budget. Students are the ones that set the fees for the ones that would be affected by this bill. As for the other ones, we are included in the options. Having any sort of mandatory restriction or prohibition on them would take some of the power away from the students' hands instead of improving it. As for the fees, what they go to, the student life act that happens on campuses is actually very beneficial to the students, not just the ones that are employed in it, but the other ones as well. Multicultural centers, veteran centers, graduation ceremonies all come out of student life dollars. And so even if they don't opt to be an active member of a specific club or organization on campus, they are still positively affected by student life on campus. And our retention rates are abysmally low. I don't see affecting student life in any negative way to be any sort of benefit to any specific student. The fees also go to a number of jobs on our campuses. When we found out about this bill at the same time as the majority of campuses themselves, we found that a number of our student life directors and things like that were respectfully and believably in a tizzy about it. Because instantly when they saw this, they saw that their bill, their jobs could disappear. Because if enough students opt out of these mandatory fees, then suddenly we can't afford the club organizations and everything like that. That is their entire job. And so a number of staff members, not just student staff, but as well as the actual staff members of our institutions, could be negatively affected by this. And last, the fees, in my opinion, create a certain level of transparency for our students on our campuses. Because we are actively engaged in the setting of the fees and because it comes from our pocket, we recognize exactly where it goes. When it's a parking fee, it can't be used for student life. When it's a student life fee, it can't be used in the general fund for something else. Removing the student life fees in any way or making them smaller will cause more money to come out of the general fund. And with that, students don't have as much control or power over what things are going to. The fees that this bill would affect would actually limit what we can do and what we see and what we understand on our campus. And therefore, I absolutely reject both of these bills.
Thank you. We have a couple more testifiers, I think, and I appreciate your patience. And if you'll step forward, and again, if you can be brief, it would be real appreciated. So identify yourself, please. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Randy Nickel. I'm a full-time student at Dakota County Technical College. I am a veteran, and I'm also a combat wounded veteran. Student life impacts me greatly. Student life has helped me find the resources to provide almost all of my food for each month. They provide me a place for the Veterans Club to meet. I'm the president of the Veterans Club, and when we talk about the ripple effect, without a place to meet, my fellow veterans would not have known about another veteran that's in a wheelchair that needed to move from one apartment to the other. Just having this place to meet and talk about what we're going to do, when we're going to do it, and how we're going to do it is a life-changing event for this gentleman and his family. We need to keep these fees. Dakota County Technical College, not the largest college in the state, but the fees to me are minimal. I'm involved in the Student Senate. I'm involved in Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Committee. I'm the president of the Veterans Club. All this stuff affects me personally. All this stuff comes from the student fees. We cannot take these fees and make them optional. We got to have it. We got to have all this stuff. It not only affects myself, it affects all the students, whether they opt to use a certain program or not. Later on here, I will be using the Wellness Center for some physical therapy. I don't use it right now because my doctor says no. But if it was not there, I would have to take money out of my pocket to join a gym or whatever. I don't have that money. I rely solely on the VA for my benefits. They pay for my education. They pay for my books. I rely on VA for everything. The school provides me with the rest. And part of that is student life. And it's a big impact on my life.
Thank you for your service, too. And I assume there is quite a number of veterans now attending at your college and many others around the state.
Yes, I do not know the numbers. But I see veterans come into the Veterans Service Center every day. Right. I know one gentleman, he works a full-time job. He comes in a couple hours in the morning, takes a nap on the sofa, gets up, goes to his class. He comes back, he takes another nap, goes to another class, and then he goes to work all night long. And without a Veterans Service Center, where would this guy go? He has a family, he works 40, 50 hours a week, and then he goes to school full-time, too? He has to sleep somewhere, that's just one story of hundreds.
Well, thanks for being there.
Thank
help
you.
Him and the others, too. So thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
We have a couple more. You've been very patient.
Chair, committee members, Ian Canton, organizing director of the Minnesota Public Interest Research Group. We oppose both 2197 and 2198 in their current forms for everything you've heard said today. I would just like to point out again that when you take out anything academic, administrative, or health service related, we're talking about $24 a semester at the University of Minnesota. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for our testifier, could you tell me what Minnesota Public Interest Research Group is?
We are a student-directed, nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that empowers and trains students to engage their community and take collective action in the public interest through the state of Minnesota.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is MPRG open then to all students, to train students to advocate for anything that the student might believe in?
Mr. Cantonet?
Yes, that is up to the student board of directors. So any student that pays a MPRG fee in the state of Minnesota is considered a MPRG member. And anyone is then allowed to present issues and vote on issues at our board of directors or to run for our board of directors.
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, so then when I was a student at the University of Minnesota, since I paid the student service fee, I would have been considered a member of MPR, correct?
Correct. Chair, correct. Sorry.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While I was a student at the University of Minnesota, I was told that we were only allowed to advocate for a specific set of things, which I don't believe were necessarily a representative of all students, and they were very narrowly confined to a certain ideology. And I don't need an answer or a response to this, but I think it's just important that we note that in MPERG, I'd like to note their budget at the University of Minnesota this year is $88,362. That's it, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Unless something further that you'd like to share with us?
Chair, committee members, I would just add that Rep. Christensen would have been able to present any issue he would have liked to work on at our Issues and Actions Conference that happens yearly. And if that would have been voted by a majority of the peers there, he would have been allowed to work on that issue. I'd also just add that that $88,000 pans out to $1.11 per student.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Good evening, and welcome to the committee.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Stephanie Hunt. I am a student at Dakota County Technical College, and I'm not really here representing the student government side of things. I'm here representing a CTSO, which is a career technical student organization. I am a national officer for that career technical student organization called Business Professionals of America. And without student life and without the funding from the student fees, I would have never had this opportunity. I am a first-generation college student. I moved 13 hours away from my home to come to school here in Minnesota. And with that, I don't have a lot of money. I am very low income, provided everything on my own. So with that said, these student fees, I pay, I'd say roughly about $50. It's based per credit. So each student, depending on how many credits they take, is how much they pay towards it. And whether they take advantage of those opportunities is their own thing. Yes, some students can't do that because of scheduling conflicts, but those that do take advantage of it, they succeed. So a CTSO prepares students for the workforce. So more, so less of the student side of things and more for gearing them up to work in other areas. So I am totally opposed to making these fees optional because, as they said, if students opt into paying these things, it could take away from those students that can't afford to pay the fees as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Someone else ready? Welcome to the committee. What's your name, please?
Charles Carter, Chairman Nornes, fellow committee members, thank you for your patience. I'm a U.S. Army vet. I'm also a full-time student at MCTC where I'm learning CNC machining, a good trade. The Veterans Upward Bound program, which is funded in part by student life fees, helped build me back up to where I could kind of operate in the classroom setting again, kind of get used to what it was like to, of course, turn in homework and go through the process and also figure out my FAFSA. And allowed me to set myself on this career path. It's gotten me into a bunch of clubs at MCTC. The Urban Farm Collective last year produced 1,000 pounds of produce, and we gave it away to students within our school, over 500 of them, for free. And it's a pretty dramatic return on investment for only putting in a couple hundred dollars of a student fee. Our community development club allowed us to actually host Representative Ilham Omar when she had a roundtable discussion with our students at large. There's a lot of quantifiable values that are bought by student life fees, but there's a lot of unquantifiable ones too. A lot of that is community, connections. It allows us to grow together much like you guys have and your institution does. I feel that the analogy to student life being like a parking garage is pretty reductionist. It is not a place to store large objects. It is a community that has a government that oversees it to try to make it more accountable to the people at large. If we presented to you that you had to get a taxpayer referendum anytime you wanted to raise taxes, or you had to, you could opt in or opt out of, you know, taxes to pay for the state government, I imagine it would cause great destruction to your institution. We don't want to see that happen to ours either. This has allowed us to represent students. It has great returns on investment. It helps retention rates. And frankly, I think it would be a great burden if we reduced this investment in education the same way it would be a burden if we didn't help out in tuition. Both sides of this are about like giving opportunities to students, both financial opportunities and community opportunities. And I don't think either of these bills will help expand opportunities for students. The case was made that people have to work very hard to be able to pay off these student life fees. But right now, if MSCSA wasn't there, if it wasn't funded by these student life fees to be able to advocate for tuition reform in previous years, students would already be working harder. They would already be spending more hours to try to pay for tuition. And so I think the benefits outweigh the losses, and they're already kind of proven. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. You were in the service, is that what you said?
2.5 years active duty Army, 1 year reservist. And
were you deployed?
I was over in South Korea for a little bit. Okay. It's not really... it's war zone, but it's not a war zone.
It's pretty close to some danger over there. So, well, thank you for being here and your testimony. Appreciate it. Good luck to you as you continue. Dakota? Is that where you're at, Dakota? Technical?
MCTC.
I'm getting them all confused now. But, okay. All right. But, again, good luck there. Do you have anyone else that hasn't testified yet? Okay. Anyone else in the audience? Okay. Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and everybody who came to testify. I really appreciate the discussion. You know, I think we've had a good discussion today about student service fees, student fees in general, their place in higher education. And I think, you know, what we really need to talk about and really think about is things that are in student service fees that maybe shouldn't be in student service fees that belong in tuition. Representative Haley talked about that. Things that are vital to the university really feel like they should be things that are included in tuition. Not in a student fee. And, you know, I think there's very valid concern that I've heard from people, and I think that has been brought up to a certain extent today, that it's in some ways a way to disguise the true cost of higher education in student service fees, and that schools are, in some cases, hiding things that are necessary and vital costs in student service fees. You know, as far as, you know, I said at the beginning, you know, I wanted to have a discussion, you know, about how we should move forward on student service fees. And that's why I wanted to talk about these two bills, two options really concurrently, 2197 and 2198. 2198 is the opt-out, allowing students to opt out of student service fees. And 2197 has students approve an increase in student service fees in a campus referendum. And frankly, you know, from the testimony, I think we've heard a lot of support for the campus referendum proposal. A lot of students talking about how vital student input is and how vital having students have the say on student service fees and how valuable they are. And I think, you know, in a lot of cases at a lot of schools, student service fees are providing vital services and are of value to students, and students see that, and I think, you know, they would inflationary increase or a valuable increase in the student service fee would likely pass a student referendum with flying colors in those sort of a situations. But, you know, some people, some of the testifiers talked about students electing to pay the student service fee. And let's, you know, I think we need to be very clear that these fees are mandatory. And, you know, I think the message has been clear to us today that maybe the opt-out way is not the way to go, but that, you know, we do think there's a place for student input, and we do think, you know, we heard the student body president at the University of Minnesota express a lot of support for House File 2197, the referendum plan. And I think that's a good way to go. I think it's a good thing for our committee to think about and discuss with folks, because this really is about the cost of college. That's what this all comes down to, is people, students that are pinching pennies in their dorm room, in their campus apartment, trying to figure out how they're going to pay for college and trying to figure out how they can take out the least amount of money in loans as possible. And student service fees, in a lot of cases, have become an obstacle to college being more affordable. And I think House File 2197 and looking at reforming student service fees in general is a really core piece. You know, I talked about tuition earlier, and now I'm talking about driving down fees, and I think it's all part of the equation to drive down the cost of college in Minnesota. Thank you, Ms. Chair, and thank you, members. With that, I'll renew my motion to lay over House File 2198 and House File 2197 for possible inclusion.
All right. So done. So done. I can't get it out. So moved. All right. I'm excited to tell you we're not going to do the next bill tonight. We're going to do that tomorrow.
Oh, thank you.
So the next bill on your agenda will be postponed till tomorrow. And with that, we are adjourned.